indictment against me. And I would tell you that sometimes I use sex to avoid communication. It's the best escape when we're down on our luck. But I can express more emotions than laughter, anger, and let's if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics.
This is the Quality News Network. In Iraq today, a coordinated insurgent attack on a U.S. base north of Baghdad killed two American soldiers and wounded 17. Eight Iraqi police officers were also killed. It involved at least three suicide car bombs as well as 50 gunmen who opened fire at the outpost. The U.S. military says an American Marine was killed today in the Sunni-dominated Anbar province. Since Friday, five American service members have been killed in fighting there. Also today, a roadside bomb explosion southwest of Baghdad killed three U.S. soldiers and wounded two. In the Baghdad area today, at least 22 people were killed in several bombings. Despite the joint U.S.-Iraqi security crackdown, a massive car bomb attack yesterday in a Shiite area killed at least 63 people. The New York Times reports today that al-Qaeda has regained strength in parts of Pakistan in the tribal area near the Afghan border. American intelligence officials say there is increasing evidence that Osama bin Laden's deputy, Ayman al-Zawahiri, has set up training compounds for militants who are preparing to strike targets beyond Afghanistan. President Bush today marked the President's Day holiday by comparing the American Revolutionary War to the war on global terrorism. He said, quote, "The father of our country believed that freedoms we secured in our revolution were not meant for Americans alone," end quote. In Jerusalem, the latest Middle East summit ended today with little progress except an agreement to meet again for more talks. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice met with Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas. In India, two bombs went off on a train, causing a fire that killed at least 66 people late Sunday. The train was headed for Pakistan. An Indian government official said the attack was sabotage aimed at undermining the India-Pakistan peace process. Iran has started a new round of war games, according to the Iranian state media. It's the second round of military maneuvers this month. In London today, a school janitor was arrested in connection with several recent letter bombs. At least nine people were injured in the attacks. In New Jersey, civil unions between same-sex couples took effect today. New Jersey is the third state in the U.S. to offer the civil unions, which provide the legal benefits but not the title of marriage. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news is coming up next.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
Avalanches in three western states, Montana, Utah, and Idaho, have killed six people this weekend. Three climbers who were stranded on Oregon's Mount Hood overnight were rescued today. The climbers, two women and a man, fell off a ledge Sunday. They were well-equipped and had mountain locator units. The USDA announced a recall of Oscar Mayer Lewis Rich ready-to-eat chicken breast strips with rib meat. The packages may have been contaminated with listeria. There have been no illnesses reported. XM and Sirius Satellite Radio, the two main providers, announced a merger today. The two companies negotiated the deal over the weekend. An Indian company, Bharti Enterprises, will spend up to $2.5 billion in a partnership with Walmart. They will set up a nationwide chain of retail retail stores and supermarkets in India over the next 8 years. About 60,000 people will be employed in the retail venture. South Korean automaker Hyundai has denied a British newspaper report that it is interested in purchasing Chrysler from Daimler Chrysler. Hyundai is the sixth largest automaker in the world. JetBlue has canceled a quarter of its flights today in the wake of last week's snowstorm, which caused lengthy delays for passengers. The airline hopes to have its operations back to normal Tuesday. The markets are closed today because of the President's Day holiday. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, America.
Now, head on with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! We've made it to Monday, and I am reminded of the lyric from a Jimmy Buffett song. I'm Bob Kincaid, of course. This is Head On. And there's a great lyric in a song called Manana where he sings, well, they're freezing up in Buffalo, stuck in their cars, while I'm lying here neath the sun and the stars. You know, it was beautiful here today. About 55 degrees, a gentle breeze blowing, sky like, cobalt. Gorgeous. Just beautiful here. Went out and got some sunshine on my balding white little head. Just made me feel all better. Meanwhile, in the wild reaches of the hills and hollers of an undisclosed location in West Virginia, my darling wife and children are snowed in. And, boy, all the difference in the world. But enough of that. I am sitting here looking, and because we got to talk about the real news of the day. I am sitting here looking at a photograph of Britney Spears. Never mind the Iraq War. Never mind the presidential campaign. It's going way too early, way too soon. No. Britney Spears has shaved her head, and I'm telling you, she's not like hot like Percy Cambada was in the first Star Trek movie, okay? I'm looking at her photograph on BartCop.com, even as we speak, and I swear, she looks a little like Mel Gibson. I mean, really. Yeah, go to BartCop. Have a look. She does. Tell me she doesn't look a little bit like Mel Gibson. It's just creepy and eerie, and somebody bobbed those ears. All the other work done, and she couldn't get the ears bobbed? Those things look like dishes for the National Radio Astronomy Observatory. Have we ever seen Britney's ears before? Apparently, it's the only part of Britney we haven't seen before. God, I'm off and running, and I'm catty tonight, so I apologize, but I was cruising down Bart Cop, and I saw the photograph, and stop the presses! And there has been, since Saturday, a full-on Britney frenzy. Well, I mean, with occasional sidebars over to Anna Nicole Smith. And by the way, Is it just me, or is there something just a little bit necrophilic about the way the media does the Anna Nicole Smith story? And by that, what I mean is, we're talking about an issue where a woman died of God knows what, but she's dead, she's got a kid, there's a will, there's a fight going on around her, and yet the footage that they use for her every time they show her is of her doing runway struts and wearing, shall we say, snug clothing. I'm sorry, that's necrophilic. You know, the best thing about necrophilia is never having to say you're sorry. Ew. But I think these two things just did well. But we know what the media is, don't we? Just sleazy, blood-sucking vampires. I caught a rerun of an old Monty Python sketch on public television over the weekend. Graham Chapman, Terry Jones doing their old, their, you know, middle-class, middle-aged British lady bit, and, "Oh, shall we go down and give blood today?" And the other one says, "I don't want a bat hanging around my neck all day. Ah, it's not like that anymore." Well, yeah, it is. It is if you happen to rely on the American media for anything approaching your information on the world that you live in. It's exactly like that. It's like having a bat hanging around your neck all day. Just blood-sucking monk. Count Floyd. Ooh, scary stuff. Blood-sucking monkeys from outer space. Blah. The American media. Britney Spears shaved her head. Who gives a damn? Anna Nicole Smith is dead. Well, I guess it's too bad for Anna Nicole Smith. And those who loved or feasted upon her bank accounts or hoped better for the future for themselves, I guess it's too bad or too... I frankly don't know, and I don't give a damn. But there are other stories out there today that speak to some of the real problems in America. Some of the things that really matter, if you are a devotee of catching the guy that's not Wolf Blitzer, and the guy that's not Jack Cafferty, and the guy that's not Paula Zahn, and not Anderson Cooper. Oh, what's happening to my mind? I feel like Charlie in Flowers for Algernon. War on the middle class. The Lou Dobbs. Lou Dobbs is absolutely just in a full on purple polka dotted screaming hissy fit over the fact that Citibank is going to issue credit cards. Have you caught this one? Credit cards to the illegal aliens. How dare they? And of course, Lou Dobbs is all in high dudgeon, in uber schnit, because Republican Congress critters have decided to be in a high dudgeon uber schnit. Because after all, at the end of the day, Lou Dobbs, for all of his posturing, is still the same old Lou Dobbs. Republican mouthpiece. And Lou Dobbs happens to hate brown people, too. And so he can pontificate that Citibank is apparently going to give credit cards to brown people, damn them! And this is the kind of crap passing for journalism that just, beyond Britney, beyond Anna Nicole Smith, really pisses me off. Because if you sit there and listen to it for a minute, you can almost think it's journalism. Do a cutaway to Kitty Pilgrim. Sounds like something out of a Kurt Vonnegut novel. Oh, that's Billy. Well, this is probably Billy's granddaughter, Pootie Wheat. cut away to Kitty Pilgrim showing the Citibank building, and, oh, Citibank officials declined to blah, 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 blah.
And back to you, Lou.
But inherent in this is some sickening, sickening racism. Well, they couldn't get a credit card, and they don't even have to show their passport. Damn, my daddy's dead, but he's still getting credit card solicitations. If it hadn't been President's Day, I'm sure there would have been two or three more in the box today. What's Lou Dobbs got to say about that? Meanwhile, these Republicans who are shocked, shocked, I tell you, shocked at the fact that some person who swabs toilets for $2.50 an hour might get a credit card from Citibank. Disgusting. They're just disgusted. It's a threat to national security, I tell you. Somebody get me the bloody shirt! None of these good-for-nothing Republicans can be found when it comes time to, what? When it comes time to maybe take the Citibanks and the bank, it's Bank of America, I'm sorry, not Citibank, Bank of America. When it's time to take these predatory monsters to task for the way that they abuse American consumers, then you know what I mean by that. The way that they brought down the screws on their little creature, poor Joe Biden, to get the bankruptcy law rewritten so that suddenly the credit card debt is somehow secured against bankruptcy. Nah, Lou Dobbs, where were you? Sorry, Kitty Pilgrim, can't be bothered, Bob. How about you, Mr. and Mrs. Republican Congressman?
It would be an unfair intrusion into the free market process if we were to attempt to regulate the predatory lending and solicitation practices of the credit card industry.
Well, okay then, since you don't want to bother the credit card companies, then maybe they'll issue credit cards to Mexican people.
What?
Hypocrisy, hypocrisy, hypocrisy. How about the little teeny tiny clauses in credit card contracts that apply to Americans and presumably will apply too to illegal aliens, because this is really what they need, that say if you're a minute and a half late on your payment, that 4.2% interest rate you've got on that card suddenly goes to 21.7. How about that, Mr. Republican Congressman? Could we do something about that? Sorry, Bob. How about the fact that there are clauses written into these credit card agreements that say that if you're late on your power bill payment, that they can take away that 4.2% interest rate and run it up to 21.7. How about that, Mr. Republican Congressman? What, Bob? I can't hear you. Huh? Maybe that's the key to getting some reform in the credit card industry. We allege that it has something to do with Mexicans. Is that what we've got to do to get Congress to pay attention? This makes me almost physically ill. On a variety of levels, because among other things, I'm thinking that somebody who is working as hard or harder than just about anybody else in the United States really doesn't need some collection agent calling from Bank of America to get their payment. You see what I mean? Is this just a little bit upside down? Is this just a little bit crazy? Maybe not. Maybe I'm just all wet on this. I don't know. We'll take a break and come back and go to your phone calls immediately. The phone number, of course, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network.
United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be ye warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
I never thought my daughter and I would ever think the same thing is cool.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they plant a tree at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves it. He's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Head on. I'm Bob Kincaid. 24 minutes past the hour. And straight to the phones we go, calling from Maine, our good friend David. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob. Long time no talker.
It has been a while. You doing all right?
Yeah, it's been a while. Well, you've been off the air for a little bit, and I didn't catch you on for Friday. But I have something today that is going to outrage people, and they might punch some walls in the plaster. Really hasn't been talked about in the media, and I thought I'd bring it up. It's an article by the New Yorker, in the New Yorker, on Rob Sernow, who executive produces 24. The article covers the influence and the political leanings that Sernow has. What he says in it will shock people. So I'm just going to read selective clips that I pulled out.
Okay.
Okay. This is he starts out, "The military loves our show," he said recently. Sernow is 52 and has the coiled energy of an athlete. His hair is close-cropped and has a soul patch. When he was young, he worked as a carpet salesman with his father. Oh, there you go. There's a sign right there. "The trick to selling anything," he learned, "is to carry yourself with confidence and get the customer to like you within the first 5 minutes." He's got it down. "People in the administration love the series, too," he said. "It's a patriotic show. They should love it." Sernow, a cigar enthusiast, has converted a room down the hall from his office into a salon with burled wood humidors and a full bar. His friend, Rush Limbaugh, the conservative talk radio host, sometimes joins him for a smoke. The ground floor of the factory has a large soundstage on which many of 24's interior scenes are shot. Most terrorist experts will tell you that the ticking time bomb situation never occurs in real life or very rarely. But on our show, it happens every week. According to Darius Rajali, a professor of political science at Reed College and the author of the forthcoming book, Torture and Democracy, the conceit of the ticking time bomb first appeared in Jean Lagouille's 1960 novel Le Centurion, written during the brutal French occupation of Algeria. The series, Sernow says, is ripped out of the zeitgeist of what people's fears are, their paranoia that we're going to be attacked, and it makes people look at what we're dealing with in terms of threats to national security. There are not a lot of measures short of extreme measures that will get it done. America wants the war on terror fought by Jack Bauer. He's a patriot. Before the attacks, fewer than four acts of torture appeared on primetime television each year, according to Human Rights First, a nonprofit organization. Now, there are more than 100. And as David Danzig, a project director of Human Rights, noted, the tortures have changed. It used to be almost exclusively the villains who tortured. Today, torture is often perpetrated by the heroes. The Parents Television Council, a nonpartisan watchdog group, has counted what it says are 67 torture scenes during the first seasons of 24, more than one every other show. The show's villains usually inflict the more gruesome tortures. CTU agents have used some of the same controversial interrogation methods that the U.S. employed on some Al-Qaeda suspects. In one instance, Bauer denies painkillers to a female terrorist who is suffering from a bullet wound, just as American officials have acknowledged doing in the case of Abu Zadaya, one of the highest-ranking Al-Qaeda operatives in U.S. custody. "I need to use every advantage I've got," Bauer explains to the victim's distressed sister. The show sometimes toys with the audience's discomfort about abusive interrogations. In Season 2, Bauer threatens to murder a terrorist's wife and children one by one before the prisoner's eyes. The suspect watches on closed-circuit television what appears to be an execution-style slaying of his son. Yet, under U.S. and international law, a mock execution is considered psychological torture and is illegal. Throughout the series, secondary characters raise moral objections to abusive interrogation tactics, yet the show never engages in a serious dialogue on the subject. No one argues that torture doesn't work or that it undermines America's foreign policy strategy. Instead, the doubters tend to be soft-hearted dupes. A tremulous liberal who defends a Middle Eastern neighbor from vigilantism is killed when the neighbor turns out to be a terrorist. When a civil liberties-minded lawyer makes a high-toned argument to a presidential aide against unwarranted detentions, you continue to arrest people. "You're giving the terrorists exactly what they want," she says. The aide sarcastically responds, "Well, you got the makings of a splendid law review article here. I'll pass it on to the president." In another episode, a human rights lawyer from a fictional organization called Amnesty Global tells Bauer, who wants to rough up an uncharged terror suspect, that he will violate the Constitution. Bauer responds, "I don't want to bypass the Constitution, but these are extraordinary circumstances." He appeals to the president, arguing that any interrogation permitted by the law won't be sufficiently harsh. "If we want to procure any information from this suspect, we're going to have to do it behind closed doors," he says. "You're talking about torturing this man," the president says. "I'm talking about what's necessary to stop this warhead from being used against us," Bauer answers. When the president wavers, Bauer temporarily quits his job so that he can avoid defying his chain of command and breaks the suspect's fingers. Howard Gordon, who is the series showrunner or lead writer, told me that he concocts many of the torture scenes himself. This will scare you, Bob. "Honest to God, I'd call them improvisations and sadism," he said. Several copies of the CIA's 1963 Kubark interrogation manual can be found at the 24 offices. But Gordon said that, for the most part, our imaginations are the source. Sometimes these ideas are inspired by a scene's location or come from props, what's on the set. He explained that much of the horror is conjured by the viewer. To see a scalpel and see it move below the frame of the scene is a lot scarier than watching the whole thing.
Well, that's worth noting, David, because if we, you know, the best example of that is of course Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho.
Right.
Do you know what the stuff on going down the drain is and on the shower curtain?
Isn't it blood?
No, it's chocolate syrup, but it looks really good in black and white.
Yeah, I can imagine. It says, when you get a camera moving fast and someone screaming, it really works. In recent years, he said, we resorted a lot to a pharmacological sort of thing. A character named Burke, a federal employee of the CTU who carries a briefcase filled with elephantine hypodermic needles, has proven indispensable. He'll inject chemicals that cause horrible pain, that can knock down your defenses. A sort of sodium pentothal plus. When we're stuck, we call Burke. The truth is, there's a certain amount of fatigue. It's getting hard not to repeat the same torture techniques over and over. Oh, I feel so sorry for you, Gordon. Gordon, who is a moderate Democrat, said that it worries him when critics say that we've enabled and reflected the public's appetite for torture. Duh. Nobody wants to be the handmaid to a relaxed policy that accepts torture as a legitimate means of interrogation, he went on. But the premise of 24 is the ticking time bomb. It takes an unusual situation and turns it into the meat and potatoes of the show. He paused. I think people can differentiate between a television show and reality. No, they can't, Gordon.
That's where he's wrong.
And it gets worse. This is where I want people.
And he knows he's lying, David.
Right. If I run out of time, I may have to call back later. Just telling people. This past November, U.S. Army Brigadier General Patrick Finnegan. People, pay attention to this part now. The Dean of the United States Military Academy at West Point flew to Southern California to meet with the creative team behind 24. Finnegan, who was accompanied by three of the most experienced military and FBI interrogators in the country, arrived on the set as the crew was filming. At first, Finnegan, wearing an immaculate Army uniform, his chest covered in ribbons and medals, aroused confusion. He was taken for an actor and was asked by someone what time his call was. In fact, Finnegan and the others had come to voice their concern that the show's central political premise that the letter of American law must be sacrificed for the country's security was having a toxic effect. In their view, the show promoted unethical and illegal behavior and has adversely affected the training and performance of real American soldiers. I'd like them to stop, Finnegan said of the show's producers. They should do a show where torture backfires. The meeting, which lasted a couple of hours, had been arranged by Danzig, the human rights first official. Several top producers of 24 were present, but Cerno was conspicuously absent. Isn't that convenient? Cerno explained to me, "I just can't sit in a room that long. I'm too ADD, man. I can't sit still." He told the group that the meeting conflicted with a planned conference call with Roger Ailes, the chairman of the Fox News Channel. Another participant in the conference call attended the meeting. Ailes wanted to discuss a project that Cernow had been planning for months. the debut on February 18th of the half-hour news hour, a conservative satirical treatment of the week's news. Oh, how's that one working out for you, sir, now? Before the meeting, Stuart Harrington, one of the three veteran interrogators, had prepared a list of 17 effective techniques, none of which were abusive. He and the others described various tactics, such as giving suspects a postcard to send home, thereby learning the name and address of their next kin. After Howard Gordon, the lead writer, listened to some of Harrington's suggestion, he slammed his fist on the table and joked, "You're hired!" He also excitedly asked the West Point delegation if they knew of any effective truth serums. Are these people for real? At other moments, the discussion was more strained. Finnegan told the producers that 24 by suggesting that the U.S. government perpetrates a myriad form of torture hurts the country's image internationally. Finnegan, who is a lawyer, has for a number of years taught a course on the laws of war to West Point senior cadets who would soon be commanders in the battlefields of Iraq and Afghanistan. He always tries, he said, to get his students to sort out just what is legal but what is right. Not just what is legal, but what is right. However, it has
David, I mean, you know, the Limbaugh reference there early in the piece.
Have you
listened to some right wing radio? I know you hear it from time to time, just
right.
Like I do. Have you ever heard Rush Limbaugh go into one of his 24 orgies?
No, I haven't. But
I mean, absolute word vomit. I think there's got to be some money changing hands or something because. I was driving downtown the other day, and I heard him reference, "My friends, you can go to our, we'll have the link to the 24 Marshmallowton here just in a matter of minutes, and you can go directly to the 24 site and see some blah, 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 cross-promotion." And people still wonder, they still think that Rush Limbaugh is getting by selling Swedish mattresses and patent erection medicines. It's this kind of thing. The Fox News was no sooner on the air than Flush Limbaugh was out there hustling it every day on his program.
It's important for people to understand the influence and how incestuous the relationship with Rob Sternow, Limbaugh, and our White House administration people. Our White
Absolutely.
House administration, a direct line to the damn White House. I mean, come on. And anyways, it goes on.
Well, you know what blows me away, David?
Yeah.
I can't help thinking that, you know, the lead character, the Jack Bauer character in this program, which, incidentally, I will gladly say I have never watched. I've never seen 24.
I've never watched it either.
I have no interest in it, okay? But Jack Bauer is played by Kiefer Sutherland. Kiefer Sutherland is, of course, the son of Donald Sutherland. Donald Sutherland made a career out of being sort of the left-wing wacky, if you will, with MASH, a couple of other films.
Right.
You know, good actor. And I don't know. Is it fair as things like this roll through the media? Is it fair for us to ask of someone like Kiefer Sutherland, "Are you a wingnut, or are you just getting a paycheck?"
It answers the question in here, and I think you'll be surprised by his answer because there's something going on behind the scenes of 24 that people don't understand. I'll get to that
okay.
in a second. However, it has become increasingly hard to convince some cadets that America has to respect the rule of law and human rights, even when terrorists did not. One reason for the growing resistance, he suggested, was misperception spread by 24, which was exceptionally popular with his students. As he told me, the kids see it and say, "If torture is wrong, what about 24? He continued, "The disturbing thing is that although torture may cause Jack Bauer some anger, it is always the patriotic thing to do." Gary Solis, the retired law professor who designed and taught the law of war for commander's curriculum at West Point, told me that he had similar arguments with his students. He said that under both U.S. and international law, Jack Bauer is a criminal. In real life, he would be prosecuted. Yet the motto of many of his students was identical to Jack Bauer's, "Whatever it takes." His students were particularly impressed by a scene in which Bauer barges into a room where a stubborn suspect is being held, shoots him in one leg, and threatens to shoot the other if he doesn't talk. In less than 10 seconds, the suspect reveals that the associates planned to assassinate the Secretary of Defense. Salas told me, I tried to impress them on that this technique would open the wrong doors, but it was like trying to stomp out an anthill. The 24 producers told the military and law enforcement experts that they were careful not to glamorize torture. They noted that Bauer never enjoys inflicting pain, and that it has clearly exacted a psychological toll on the character. As Gordon put it, Jack is basically damned. Finnegan and the others disagreed, pointing out that Bauer remains coolly rational after committing barbarous acts, including the decapitation of a state's witness with a hacksaw. Joe Navarro, one of the FBI's top experts in questioning techniques, attended the meeting. He told me, only a psychopath can torture and be unaffected. You don't want like people like that in your organization. They are untrustworthy and tend to have grotesque other problems. Cochran, who has a law degree, listened politely to the delegation's complaints. He told me that he supports the use of torture in narrow circumstances and believes that it can be justified under the Constitution. The doctrine of necessity says you can occasionally break the law to prevent greater harm, he said. I think that could supersede the Convention Against Torture. Few legal scholars agree with this argument. At the meeting, Cochran demanded to know what the interrogators would do if they faced the imminent threat of a nuclear blast in New York City and had custody of a suspect who knew how to stop it. One interrogator said they would apply physical coercion only if he received a personal directive from the president. But Navarro, who estimates that he has conducted some 12,000 interrogations, replied that torture was not an effective response. These are very determined people, and they won't turn just because you pull a fingernail out, he told out. And Finnegan argued that torture fanatical Islamist terrorists is particularly pointless. They almost welcome torture, he said. They expect it. They want to be martyred. A ticking time bomb, he pointed out, would make a suspect only more unwilling to talk. They know it. They can simply hold out. They know if they can simply hold out several hours, all the more glory, the ticking time bomb will go off. The notion that physical coercion and interrogations is unreliable, although widespread among military intelligence officers and FBI agents, has been firmly rejected by the Bush administration. Last September, President Bush defended the CIA's use of an alternative set of procedures in order to save innocent lives. He said the agency needed to be able to use enhanced measures to extract vital information from dangerous detainees who were aware of terrorist plans we could not get anywhere else. Although reports of abuses by U.S. troops in Iraq and Afghanistan and in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, have angered much of the world, the response of Americans has been more tepid. Finnegan attributes the fact that we are generally more comfortable and more accepting of this, in part to the popularity of 24, which has a weekly audience of 15 million viewers and has reached millions more through DVD sales. The third expert at the meeting was Tony Lagoarnis, a former Army interrogator in the war in Iraq. He told me the show's staff that DVDs of shows such as 24 circulate widely among soldiers stationed in Iraq. Lagoarnis said to me, people watch the shows and then walk into the interrogation booths and do the same things they've just seen. He recalled that some men he had worked with in Iraq watched a television program in which a suspect was forced to hear tortured screams from a neighboring cell. The men later tried to persuade their Iraqi translator to act the part of a torture victim in a similar intimidation ploy. Lagoarnis intervened. Such scenarios constitute psychological torture. In Iraq, I never saw pain produce intelligence, Lagoarnis said. I worked with someone who used waterboarding, an interrogation method involving the repeated near drowning of a suspect. I used severe hypothermia, dogs, and sleep deprivation. I saw suspects after soldiers had gone in their homes and broke their bones or made them sit on a Humvee's hot exhaust pipes until they got third-degree burns. Nothing happened. Some people, he said, gave confessions, but they just told us what we already knew. It never opened up a stream of new information. If anything, he said, physical pain can strengthen the resolve to clam up. Last December, the Intelligence Science Board, an advisory panel to the U.S. intelligence community, released a report declaring that most observers, even those within professional circles, have unfortunately been influenced by the media's colorful and artificial view of interrogation as almost always involving hostility, In a clear reference to 24, the report noted, LaGuarnas told the 24 team what the U.S. military and the FBI teach real intelligence professionals, rapport building, the slow process of winning over informants, is the method that generally works best. There are also nonviolent ruses, he explained, and the way to take suspects by surprise. The 24 staff seemed interested in the narrative possibilities of such techniques, LaGuarnas recalled. They told us they'd love to incorporate ruses and rapport building. At the same time, he said, Cochrane and the others from 24 worried that such approaches would take too much time on an hour-long television show. The delegations of interrogators left the meeting with the feeling that the storylines on 24 would be changed a little, if at all. It shows they have a social conscience that they'd even meet with us at all. They were receptive, but they have a format that works. They have won a lot of awards. Why would they want to play with the number one show, LaGuarnas instead of the 2014? They were a bit prickly. They have this money-making machine, and we
David,
were telling them
what,
more.
David.
Yeah.
What does this mean for you?
What does this mean for me?
Yeah, what does this mean for you?
Reality and fantasy merges together in political dire straits. Basically, that's what this means for me. I mean, now this is where it gets into what you were talking about. Sutherland, how does Sutherland feel?
I'd like to know that, but I really want to know what you feel about this. We got to take a break, David. We'll be back, but I want to talk about this. Tell people where they can find this article and read it for themselves.
Okay.
But then let's talk about it. Okay.
I can call back later for this, or I can stand.
Well, we'll finish it up here in a minute, but I want to talk about it. Okay. All right. Hang on, David.
Okay.
This is the Head On Radio Network. Jump in line, couple of lines open, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
The difference between what I do on my show and what all the right-wing types do on their shows is very simple. I'm not going to lie to you. That doesn't mean you're going to agree with me about everything or that you're going to like hearing everything I have to say, but I will guarantee you that when I say something on my show, I say it because I mean it and I believe it, and I'm not just saying it to get you riled up and to boost my ratings. No potty mouth, no trash talking, no BS, just the straight truth as I see it, because the lies may sound good for a while, but the truth is there forever. It's not always pleasant, it's not always nice, sometimes it's hard to see through all the crap, but it's there. And that's what you're going to get from me, and that's why you should listen to my show. The Cup of Joe Radio Show, Mondays and Fridays from noon to 2 Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Have you ever lost too much money gambling? Did you ever think, just one more hand and I'll win it all back? Just one more roll of the dice, or one more coin in the slot? This could be a sign of problem gambling. And like any addiction, it's hard to stop on your own. So if this sounds like you or someone you know, call the toll-free Problem Gambling Helpline at 1-866-NO-BET-00. That's 1-866-662-3800. Problem gambling can happen to anyone. If it has happened to you or someone you care about, please call. Confidential, professional help is available 24 hours a day. The Problem Gambling Helpline is funded by the Kansas Coalition on Problem Gambling and Addiction and Prevention Services. A message from the Problem Gambling Helpline and this radio station.
Welcome back. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Monday evening. The sun is setting slowly in the blue-skied west here in the last little foothills of the Appalachians in northwest Alabama. My lovely wife, Agnes, producing, keeping everything running smoothly from the control room in the hills and hollers of a undisclosed location in wild, wonderful West Virginia. And we're talking with our friend David in Maine. You there, David?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. Synopsize for us, please. We're talking about 24, which I find to be a never having watched it, maybe great, okay, but the premise is loathsome because it is designed solely and with no other purpose than to foster a feeling in fairly weak minded individuals in this country that we are constantly under threat.
Well,
and it's a mouthpiece for the right wing and the Bush administration. So where does Kiefer Sutherland come in on this?
Well, he finds the torture at Abu Ghraib absolutely criminal, and they said they had a talk with him after the show, and it says he was really concerned about he stressed that he tries to tell people that the show is just entertainment. But Sutherland, who claimed to be bored with playing torture scenes, admitted that he worried about the unintended consequences of the show. I think what this has to do with is more about when an actor gets in a position that he's conflicted, that he's playing a role, and he's also conflicted that it's just television. He gets people and consultants around him. Don't worry, Kiefer, baby. You're doing great, you know?
Yeah, and you know what? He may be concerned, but he's still cashing the paychecks.
That's true, but he has gone on Charlie Rose, and I didn't know this, but he gave an interview on Charlie Rose, and he said he finds that he basically gave his leanings to what he believed. He thought everything was criminal when it comes to torture, and he condemns it all. And I think what's most important about this all is the creator of the show, Rob Sernow, and where it goes into is I'm not gonna read it.
Yeah, whom they dutifully inform us in the piece as you shared with us is a moderate Democrat.
No, that's not the moderate. Rob Sernow is the guy who has the only thing that war has solved is the fascism, the slavery.
Oh, I must have missed it then. Who was the moderate Democrat?
The moderate was Gordon. Sernow is the creator of the show, and he got his start on. I mean, obvious after I tell you what he got his start on. You know where he got his start on shows? Miami Vice and The Equalizer. The Equalizer was his big payoff. Remember that show on USA?
I do. As a matter of fact,
he had The Equalizer.
This was back when I watched television.
I think what's important.
The fact. I mean, the. It may seem like that this would seem off topic, David, because it's television and you and I and
right.
liberals and progressives, Democratic voters, that we realize that it is not real. You
right.
know, it was a hard thing for me to accept a long time ago when it was patiently explained to me that bunny rabbits do not drop ping pong balls on aging sea captains, on Captain Kangaroo, but the message really did stay with me. However, it's the emotional manipulation involved. I was going down the road the other day, David, and I heard this right wing wannabe yakking away on a station coming out of Nashville, and he was complaining about Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. He was complaining about Friends. He was complaining about Will and Grace. And he says, yeah, why can't we have the good television shows anymore? Why can't we have the Brady Bunch and All in the Family again? And I about ran off the road, David. All in the Family is now, these people are so ignorant and so separated from reality that this guy is looking back on All in the Family as a family-oriented program, the kind of stuff.
They probably thought Archie Bunker was a moderate, you know.
Well, in their world, Archie Bunker was a liberal.
Yeah, he was a liberal.
You know, and this idiot that is lecturing, I hear him lecturing a 21-year-old about how she doesn't really understand the cultural context of all this because she's so young, and he says, you know, I'm 39. And I remember blah, 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 blah. Well, I'm guessing he doesn't remember when Sammy Davis Jr. Planted a big, fat, wet kiss on the side of Archie's head, and America went just nuts.
It's important to know about the creator and where he came from, because this is where a psychological profile is developed and everything is molded together, and what you have right now is this constant fear of any threat coming to you, and you react in such a psychopathic way or in such a irrational way. And here's an example, just for his history. I'm just going to read a little bit on this. He graduated in 1972 from Beverly Hills High. Surnow said that he has always felt like an outsider. His classmates were mostly wealthy, but his father was an itinerant carpet salesman who came to California from Detroit. He cold-called potential customers, most of whom lived in Compton and Watts. Surnow was much younger than his two brothers, and he grew up virtually as an
outsider. So his father grew up preying upon less fortunate folks.
Right.
Cold calling folks in Compton and Watts.
Right.
And that is that's the model that this guy grew up with.
Yes, that's the model. It explains a little bit. He says where he slept on a fold-out cot. If his father made a sale, he'd come home and give him the thumbs up. But Surnow said that 9 out of 10 times ended in failure. If he made 3 sales a month, we could stay where we lived, he recalled. His mother, who worked as a saleswoman in a clothing store, fought depression her whole life. Surnow, who described his parents as wonderful people, said, I was a latchkey kid. I raised myself. So you see, when you have a person like this who's able to obtain success, astronomical success, influencing cultures among cultures that we have yet to see and that are right now being created as we speak. The problem I see right now is when you have somebody like that and there is no accountability in the media. I have heard zero about this piece. If this guy was a Democrat and he was on the opposite side of the fence, and he was talking like this in an article?
Oh yeah, during
like crazy.
During the Clinton years, we couldn't. It was constantly, you know, the Henry, what's his name, and Linda Bloodworth Thomason, because you know they were part of the Arkansas Mafia. Sure,
they would mention Murphy Brown like crazy. Everything that Murphy Brown says, anything like that. And the things that people should understand is this guy Surnow is a friend of the Cheneys. He's a friend of Tony Snow. See, it's incestuous. These people...
Well, sure it is. And the thing that gets me, and I guess maybe this is where, David, I don't know where you come down on this, but I know where I come down on this. If I had been watching it, finding out this stuff, I would stop watching it. Okay? And it's kind of a shame that the culture's come to that point, but I cannot allow myself to be any part whatsoever of supporting these rotten, sorry bastards. Okay, one. Here's an example. Everybody loves Raymond. Okay,
right.
Funny. God knows, Peter Boyle, hilarious.
Right.
Won't watch it because of that hateful right wing, she thing that plays his wife. Okay, it's not funny for me. I see her and I just go, ugh! Because I know how she is, and I know that if I watch this thing, I am directly or indirectly supporting right-wing politics because she's cashing the paycheck. She's cashing the royalty checks, okay?
I guess I don't see it that way. I see everything as like a character study. When I study someone, Bob, and when I watch something, I just do. I know a lot of people are influenced by it, but it's just observations for me. Here's an example. Like, I want to hear what Cernow has to say. If you understand that, I want to hear what.
Yeah, but I'm out of time. We got to knock it off, David. I'm out of time. We're at the top of the hour.
All right.
Thank you, though.
No problem.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
Later.
Bye now. The rest. If you're on hold, stay that way. We'll come to you right out of the break. I promise. This is the Head On Radio Network. Line or two open. 877-443-2366. We will be back. And I will still be Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. An insurgent attack today on a U.S. Iraqi base has killed two American soldiers and eight local police officers. Suicide car bombs and a troop of gunmen converged on the outpost just north of Baghdad. Despite the security crackdown in the Baghdad area, bombings killed 10 people today and at least 63 yesterday. It was just Saturday that an Iraqi government spokesperson announced the security crackdown was working in the city. In Jerusalem, meetings between Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and Israeli and Palestinian leaders have ended in disappointment. Members did, however, agree to meet again for more talks. Indian and Pakistani officials resumed their peace process today, just hours after a deadly train bombing in New Delhi. At least 66 people were killed when bombs exploded on a train headed to Pakistan. An Indian government official called the attacks an attempted sabotage of the peace negotiations. And the New York Times reports today that al-Qaeda has regained strength in parts of Pakistan. U.S. intelligence officials say there's increasing evidence that Osama bin Laden's top deputy has built up military training compounds near the Afghan border. At Mount Vernon today, President Bush marked the President's Day holiday by comparing the American Revolutionary War to the war on global terrorism. He said, quote, "The father of our country believed that the freedoms we secured in our revolution were not meant for Americans alone." The parallel was drawn during the visit to Mount Vernon to mark the 275th birthday of President George Washington. In London today, a school janitor was arrested in connection with several recent letter bombs. At least 9 people were injured in the attacks, and police say that people should remain on guard because they don't know if there are any more of those in the system. And Iran has started a new round of war games, according to that country's state media. It's the second round of military maneuvers this month, and U.S. military experts call the exercises muscle flexing by Iran. And on Mount Hood, Oregon, rescuers have rescued 3 stranded climbers. They say the 3 and their dog are in good condition after spending the night on the mountain. Bad weather hampered efforts to rescue those before. And New Jersey today became the 3rd state in the U.S. to offer same-sex civil unions. You're listening to Quality News Network.
Most people would rather have root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
In Connecticut, personal data, including Social Security numbers, of more than 1,700 state workers were accidentally posted on the Internet. Authorities recommend those exposed to identity theft monitor their personal finance records. And ready-to-eat chicken strips sold nationwide by Oscar Mayer and Louis Rich have been recalled. Authorities say the chicken may be contaminated with listeria. The New York Post reports that XM and Sirius Satellite Radio, the two main providers, will announce a merger today. The report says the two companies negotiated the deal over the weekend. JetBlue has canceled a quarter of its flights today in the wake of last week's snowstorm holdups. That bad weather caused lengthy delays for passengers and left the airline struggling to catch up. Airline officials hope to have operations back to normal Tuesday. Meanwhile, JetBlue's founder and CEO told the New York Times today that he was, quote, humiliated and mortified, end quote, by those massive flight delays last week. Some passengers were stranded on planes for 11 hours. And today, the financial markets were closed for the President's Day holiday, but that gave us more time to enjoy the Dow Jones record high close on Friday, which was 12,767. And, of course, there is more on our website at qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen. Thanks for listening.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, let's roll on a couple other things before we do jump to the phone. A welcome is, of course, in order to folks listening to the program via iTunes, fairly relatively sort of kind of, you know, new thing here for the Horn being listed over at iTunes, and we are thrilled to pieces that we are. I say it a lot, but I always forget that there are new listeners coming on board all the time. If you've got something you want to share with me, you can always reach me at bob@headonradio.com. And, of course, you know the phone number, 877-443-2366. This is Conversation Radio. We do afford you an opportunity to actually be heard, and we want you to take advantage of that opportunity. Did you hear during the top of the hour newscast from our friends at QNN? By the way, how about that? How about that out cue for the anchor there? Wasn't that nice? Thank you for listening. Seems like they kind of share the same maybe thinking that we have, that maybe you, the listener, are more important than the folks behind the microphone. Because it's true. It's just true. But did you hear during the newscast the New York Times reporting that Al-Qaeda and Taliban and blah, 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 have been reconstituted and they're getting stronger and they're meaner and they're badder and they're bigger and badder than ever and they're going to get us? You'd almost swear that Judy Miller was maybe working for them writing under a pseudonym. Now, why in the world would a story like that crop up in the New York Times? Could it have anything to do with the fact that last week, Dear Leader started hollering that the NATO allies are going to need to send more troops to Afghanistan because of an anticipated spring surge? Oh, that word, of their own? Oh, look it. The New York Times is out there shilling and huckstering again for the Bush administration. They wouldn't do that, would they? Yeah, they would. Let's go to the phone. Susan joins us from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Thoroughly bummed.
Bummed or bombed?
Bummed.
I'm sorry.
I I really wish I could get bombed. Well, the New York Times has out been out chilling and huckstering.
Yeah.
New York Post came out. Well, it's up on the blog, and the title is, "This is Supposed to Be Supporting the Troops." I suggest everybody, in fact, I demand everybody goes up and read it.
Okay.
It's about Walter Reed Hospital and Building 18.
Building 18.
Yeah. Now, normally you think of Walter Reed Hospital as this super efficient, super wonderful hospital. However, Building 18, in some of the rooms, part of the wall is torn and hangs in the air. It's weighted down with black mold. If the patient stands in his shower, he looks up, he can see the bathtub on the floor above him from a rotted hole.
Nice.
The building smells like greasy carryout. You get finds of mouse droppings, cockroaches, stained carpets, and cheap mattresses. All of the
Oh, that's good for maintaining sterile technique, mouse droppings and cockroaches.
Oh, yeah, and it gets worse. You have people just brought over from Iraq with severe brain injury who, before they were injured, were advanced reconnaissance operators, special forces. And they dumped them on this massive campus, and they're told, find this building. These people can't even find north, and they're dumped.
Well, sadly, as disgusting as it is, Susan, it's not at all surprising, because under the Bush administration, I've got a story here from the Washington Post from late last week, headline, Pentagon Red Tape Keeps Medical Records from Doctors of the Wounded. The Bush administration VA, out of a so-called overabundance of caution about privacy concerns, will not even transfer the medical records of somebody who's been treated from the VA to another VA hospital in another part of the country. This one particular story centers on a doctor in Richmond.
Yeah.
And the Pentagon, the Bush administration, has shut down his access to his patients' medical records online.
You would think, though, that they would be able to have, at the very least, health care at Walter Reed itself.
Well, remember the base closing controversy, Susan?
What was that?
Do you remember the base closing controversy?
Oh yeah, and they're supposedly going to shut down Walter Reed, and
right.
Stuffing that thing full of veterans, injured vets. What are they going to do with them?
Well, we had the gentleman on the show. I guess it was a month or so ago. This was the fella who was charged with, being un-American for wearing the wrong T-shirt in a Veterans Administration hospital. And he, the author of Inside the Red Zone. And he was talking about, he had written an open letter to George Bush. And he said, go and find some of those back wards. I think that was the first, back wards. This is exactly what he was talking about. This is, George Bush will not show up for a smarmy photo opportunity with a guy and a stump in Building 18.
No. There's one ward that they go to because it's it's the photo op ward. But things like Building 18 and the other wards, they don't even go near. I want people to get hold tomorrow to call their congressional delegation and tell their congress people, you go down to Walter Reed. Don't give advance warning. Just get in a nondescript car. Just go down there, walk into Building 18, and then you find out what it's like. and then you fix it.
Well, exactly.
I have a husband who's a veteran of two wars, and he was in tears. This is wrong.
Yeah, it is wrong. But, you know, try telling a Bush supporter that. Try telling a right-winger that.
You're just saying that because you're liberal.
You know, that's one of the nice things about being liberal. One has the ability to tell right and wrong outside of a political boundary. Things like doctors not having access to records, things like this Building 18 you described, Susan, they would be wrong if it happened under a Clinton, under a Bush, or, by God, under a George Washington.
Yes, and it would be anybody. But you'll notice it didn't. It happened under George Walker Bush.
Well, of course it did.
People are being treated like... The only comparable thing that I can come up that would be comparable would be the horrors that used to be called hospitals. Clara Barton invented the Red Cross cleanup.
Well, not too far from where I'm sitting now is a local landmark called Pope's Tavern. And it was a military hospital during the Civil War. And, you know, yeah, the kind of, you know, give him a slug of whiskey, a bullet to bite on, and come on, let's saw the leg off. I mean, everything the Bush administration does, Susan, they go backwards instead of forwards.
I fully expect to hear that they're going to start using prostitutes to help care for people in these wards instead of nurses.
Ugh.
After all, that's what they used to use.
Well, don't tell people, but yeah.
And
because those were the only folks who were allowed anywhere. Because the upper crust refined ladies,
yeah,
wouldn't go near it.
Congress is on a break, right?
Yeah.
So they're back in their home district.
Right.
Nancy Pelosi's office is going to get a call from me. I don't care if she only accepts calls from constituents. She's still going to get a nasty call from me.
Well, I think,
and
I think she could.
People with long distance ability should get on the phone and call her office.
Yeah. I agree.
Because this is wrong. This is a pain. This is just awful. This is terrible.
Yeah, it is. And
so
we
read that article.
Well, yeah. Susan, thank you for bringing this to our attention.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Thank you very, very much.
Put the counter.
No, don't be. Look, it's not. Learning about this stuff is not a downer. What is a downer is if we know about it and we let it go.
Anyway, it's up there, and the link to the rest of the article is there, so you won't have any problem finding the article for the rest. You know, I'm speaking to the listeners. Just go up there and read it.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, right there on the front of the blog?
Yeah, it's right there on the blog. It's called, "This is Supposed to Be Supporting the Troops?" question mark.
Very good. Thank you, Susan.
Okay. And you have a nice night.
Have a better one. Have a better one. All right.
I
take care.
Bye-bye.
Right. Bye now. And onward to our good friend Preston calling from Denver. Hey, Preston, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. Thanks. I was just speaking with Agnes, and I told her I wasn't fully aware of what was going on in your family, but I wanted to pass along my condolences. And
well, thank you very kindly. We do appreciate that. There's been an outpouring of support that has been absolutely just uplifting to us.
Great. That's good to hear. And it's good to hear you live again and on the air. Your previous caller, actually, she made me think of a program. People have been talking about things on TV, and your previous caller made me think of that movie that was on HBO called Baghdad ER.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw that, but it's about a U.S. medical company working in Baghdad and treating the people, you know.
I did see a little bit of that, yes.
Okay. And, it's hideous what's going on. And what's even more hideous is we can only imagine what's going on in the actual Baghdad ER, not the one of the U.S. military, which has a lot of funding and a lot of good equipment and sterilized rooms and that kind of thing, clean water, versus the Iraqis' Baghdad ER.
I read a story about ambulance drivers in Baghdad a couple of weeks back who can't get through checkpoints,
right?
Who have bomb victims die in the backs of their ambulances because they cannot reach appropriate medical care.
Yep. In Fallujah, when we laid siege to that city, bombed something like 40% of the structures, the homes, and the buildings, ambulances were being blown away by the U.S. military.
Yeah, shot as they went through the streets. You're right.
Same was going on in Lebanon too. But and then we talk about, you know, the PTSD that so many U.S. soldiers encounter. But again, in Iraq, the PTSD among just Iraqi children who have seen so much horror. Sometimes they've been orphaned. Again, the PTSD for them is through the roof.
But we don't talk about it. And even with something like Baghdad ER, you know, that was on HBO.
Yeah, and kudos to them. I mean,
yeah, but the thing is, how many people got to see it? You know, if you buy basic cable, Preston, you know, you can certainly get basic cable always includes Fox News.
Right. And, you know, I don't even have that. So, and I just got it through a friend of mine taped it for me. So, I mean, there's the people that can afford cable who got to see it. Then there are people who maybe taped it, passed it along. And now there's a DVD out. So in that way, we can extend its reach a little bit. And that's so much why some progressive people have been involved with projects like Books for Soldiers, because they are being inundated with DVDs of things like 24.
Right.
Which, as your other caller was talking about, is very manipulative. You know, it's probably someone in the Pentagon writing the scripts for this stuff. We know
that. Well, I think there's probably at least some shall we call it incest involved with all of this.
There you go. Yeah.
Just as with, and I don't know that it's true, but I certainly read it, back in the Reagan days, Tom Clancy.
Mm-hmm.
You remember all of his anti-Soviet saber-rattling and Hunt for Red October and all of that stuff?
Yep.
That was said to have had tentacles into the Reagan administration.
Yep. There's an interesting book, actually. I heard the author interviewed by Janine Garofalo and Sam Cedar a while back. But I think his name is Charles Robb, wrote a book called Operation Hollywood, How the Pentagon Shapes and Censors the Movies. And he had a lot of interesting cases of that going on, Top Gun and even TV shows like Lassie. There were some themes there that were very, pro-military.
Oh, I know. What's that girl? Has a terrorist thrown Timmy down the well again? Yeah.
Exactly.
Sorry.
But again, there are some... I have recently started watching 24 more closely, not because I like it. I can't stand it. And I've posted negative critiques of it on, like, Ed Schultz's and Randy Rhoads' message board. And the response mm-hmm. I got from even liberal people, a lot of them were very angry because they're like, I'm a liberal and I don't see this Pentagon manipulation going on, and there's a black president, and, you know, they use examples like that. And I think they do throw in some liberal tidbits here and there, but it's a cover for the main thrust of it, which is totally advocating terror, actually
advocating torture. It's
Arabs.
Yeah.
I was happy. I'm sorry.
No, please go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say I was happy to see CARE, that Council of American Islamic Relations. They came out and they protested it. But the thing I began to say about people getting involved with like Books for Soldiers, progressive people, is that there is an opportunity there to send through DVDs progressive material that's being made.
Can I ask you a hard question, Preston?
Sure.
Do you think the Pentagon lets that stuff get there?
I know it does, actually. I think some of it does get blocked at times. I think if your right-wing officers come upon it, then there's some noise that will be made. I know this from my own experience. I did it for a couple of years, and I wondered the same thing. And I was sending really radical material, Noam Chomsky talks and all sorts of documentaries and things. And I'd often hear back from the soldiers, so I know it got to them.
Wonderful. I mean, I wasn't trying to be overly cynical. I don't trust this administration, and I don't trust its Pentagon.
Oh, definitely. It's a good question, and I very much wondered the same thing. In fact, this one video guy I was working with in Canada, he produced a documentary called The End of Suburbia, and it's about peak oil and how we've designed our communities to kind of increase the revenue of the oil companies to make us dependent on cars and stuff like that for every trip. I was sending that, then he began to send it himself through his website, and soldiers could just click on and get a free copy. Well, he ended up hearing from Homeland Security.
And, really?
Yeah. Actually, Homeland Security contacted the group we were working through, Books for Soldiers, and then they contacted him and da-da-da-da. But the thing is, nothing really came of it. I mean, he keeps sending the stuff. I kept sending my stuff. And I think it was more of an intimidation thing, because there wasn't really.
Well, let's go. We've talked about it in the past, Preston. But let's go for a moment. Let's backtrack a little bit and talk about Books for Soldiers.
Okay, great.
Tell me, how does it work? How can people participate? Where do they need to go?
Booksforsoldiers.com is the website. In the past, it was wide open. When I first started, you could just hop on. You'd see the list of soldiers who have registered, and they put their interests in what kind of thing they want to read or what kind of movie they want to see. Oftentimes they want 24, or they want the Left Behind series. It gets kind of depressing, actually, to read some of it. But sometimes you'll see people request progressive material, people requesting maybe African-American authors or Chicano or how to learn Spanish or how to play guitar type thing. And so we can approach those people with the progressive stuff. But what you have to do now is that there's like a $10 fee, and you have to get a notary, notarize your actual address. There also is there's some kind of regulation, and it says they disadvise you to send unauthorized progressive material. And that's actually, I got one warning after a little while, and then finally I got banned from the site. But still, in between that time, I sent a ton of material. And it was so much fun, too, because I got to work with all these other progressive organizations like Utney Reader, Mother Jones Magazine, Mothering Magazine, because it's kind of a progressive parenting journal.
Right, and right.
So... And they were very.
Yeah, that's a real danger. That's a real danger to freedom.
true. But they're very generous to provide material either free or at a big discount. And so, as I said, some of it did get through. But I think we should be sending more. Eventually, they might just cut it off because it is a threat to what they're trying to prosecute. I mean, it does undercut the morale for the mission. I think it lifts the morale of a lot of the troops who are suffering or feeling these things and, you know, if they're all they're hearing from is employees at Raytheon or these right-wing evangelical groups, that will give the soldiers a particular impression of what the American public's thinking. And it's a wrong impression, and we can do a lot to change that.
Well, I think this, it sounds like a positive way of reaching folks, especially if there are, and you know, that's one of the big lies we've been handed, Preston, is that the military is made up of a bunch of right-wing zombies.
Right.
We know better, because these are kids out of Hispanic neighborhoods. These are the poor kids out of rural communities.
Yeah.
These are kids out of inner cities. And you know what? They aren't conservatives.
That's right.
They can't afford to be.
Exactly. They're populists. And,
right. So, you know, if there is some way of letting them know, you know, that we support them, that they are being handed a bunch of right-wing drivel saying that liberals don't support the troops, I can't imagine supporting a soldier any more than wanting that soldier not to get killed for no good reason. I am still mad, Preston, at Barack Obama for hurrying out and apologizing for saying that 3,000 lives have been wasted. What in the world else do you call it?
Right. At the same time, I don't know. There's a way I accept what he's saying, and there's a way that I do understand the sensitivity to something like that, because there are soldiers who are doing, in this hideous situation, they are doing heroic things and making contributions. For instance,
they're doing the best that they possibly can.
Yes.
But you know, the outcry that came from the same megaphone that created the outcry when Dick Durbin stood in the well of the Senate and pointed out the atrocities.
That's true.
And it's not families crying out. It's right wing spin mongers.
Very true. That's true. Before I forget, one other group that sends material to U.S. soldiers is it's called AnySoldier.com.
Mm-hmm.
That one, there is no registration fee. And again, the process is relatively simple to reach out, because that's something that the progressives and liberals have been missing. We've been critiquing a lot of the right-wingers by making that remark, oh, you know, they throw a yellow ribbon on the back of their SUV, and they think that's supporting the troops. And in some cases, that is all they're doing, and there is kind of a hypocrisy going on there. But oftentimes, the right-wingers are doing things like what I just mentioned, sending books and DVDs and that kind of stuff. In other cases, they're just sending, like, snacks. And oftentimes, you'll see on these websites, too, a lot of soldiers, they're not asking for armor all the time. I've never seen that, actually, and I've read a thousand requests. What they are asking for is things like socks or feminine hygiene products.
Yeah.
Or maybe a nice calendar or something like that. And this whole armor thing, you know, it's like a product. It's hard to argue against something that could potentially save the lives of these people that we do care about. But at the same time, we should keep in mind that Uncle Bucky of the Bush family, literally, that's his nickname.
Oh, yeah, I know about Uncle Bucky.
Okay. There's this article, I think, on Counterpunch website, something like Uncle Bucky makes a killing, and apparently he was invested in some company that makes the armor.
Oh, I know what you're talking about, because I've read about that in the past. They're heavily, you know, if it has anything to do with killing and dying, the Bush family is going to have its tentacles in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, among other things, the Carlyle Group, for instance, is... you know, they've made their millions by diversifying very nicely.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, remember that the Carlyle Group, after Fahrenheit 9/11 came out, they actually invested in a chain, one of the smaller independent chains of movie theaters that was showing
yeah.
that film.
So yeah,
we'll
and now
that gets shown.
And is there any truth to it? I haven't read the follow up, Preston, but. When the sale of Clear Channel was being discussed, or a bunch of Clear Channel stations, I should say,
Wasn't a consortium put together under the aegis of the Carlyle Group to make that purchase?
I wasn't aware of that. That may be. I remember seeing a long list of names, but I didn't know who they were or where they were coming from exactly, but you may very well be right. And speaking of radio sales and radio business stuff, I wanted to mention something that's occurred over the past week that's really bothered me. There was a radio station, KCTC, in Sacramento, California, where Rush Limbaugh got his first talking job. That was KCTC was airing Air America stuff, you know, Franken and others. Mm-hmm. And they also had some good local hosts, including Enid Goldstein, who was really masterful at handling.
Oh, Enid is wonderful.
Yep. But anyway, just this week, there's a message on their website that announces that they've flipped their station from Air America Progressive Talk to 24 hours a day of ESPN Sports Radio.
And, oh, God.
Yeah, and there's that station, and they're doing the same thing in New Haven, Connecticut. I think it's WAVS or something. So I wanted to mention that to other people in your audience. I certainly think people should be tuned in to Head On Radio 24 hours a day, but when you're out there surfing the web or streaming other stations, you might want to check out some of these local affiliates, support their local hosts, maybe call them if you can. Some stations provide a toll-free number. That was another great thing about KCTC. They had a national audience there that could participate. So we lost a great forum, and I think I don't know if we can have the success that the people in Madison had in bringing back their progressive radio, but at least we could drop them a line, you know, make some noise. Because I think an injustice anywhere in terms of the media is an injustice everywhere for all of us. So people may want
to listen. I agree wholeheartedly. Preston, so good to talk to you. Everything all right out Denver way?
Things are pretty good. I'm actually getting ready to go to our wonderful independent bookstore, The Tattered Cover, because one of my great heroes is going to be speaking, signing his book, Ralph Nader. He has a new book out called The 17 Traditions, and he's gotten so much flack for that election in 2000. I think a lot of it very unfair. You know, and also,
well, my issues have never been with Ralph's issues.
Yeah.
My issues have been with his methods. You know, I well remember Preston, and it just is what it is. There was a boatload of Republican money, RNC money, that went straight into his campaign in 2004.
There was some, not a lot, I don't think. Also, you know, some of the funding sources of the Democrats are not very reputable.
No, they're not.
So we're,
you know, that's why I desperately want public funding of political campaigns. It's all, you know, all this dirty money has got to go.
And one other thing I want to say is that regarding the 2000 election, when Nader and Winona LaDuke were talking all over the country, they were having 10, 15, 20,000 people going to their rallies. People, 75% of the American people wanted them in the debates. Then that incident happened in Florida that we were all focused on, and it just so happened that it was so close that Ralph Nader cost the election. So the story goes from the people who own the election machine. You know, we have all this skepticism regarding how many votes Gore got, but we don't question so much how many votes did the Green Party actually get that year. Do you think maybe that some of their votes went down some diebold rabbit hole? I think it's a real possibility.
Well, I think the entire election process is compromised, Preston.
Yeah.
There can't be any doubt of that. You know, for me, you know, I have a problem with the 2000 campaign, just because I remember Nader saying things like "There's no difference between Al Gore and George Bush."
Yeah, and again, I understand the critique of that comment, but I do understand the truth of that comment as well. I mean, we can be right and wrong at the same time in a way, and there is some truth to that, to what he was saying on the issues of this growing prison industrial complex. There's a lot of similarities, issues of
there,
like
there are, but right. I mean, I know from my personal standpoint, and those people that are dear friends of mine who are much closer to the ground zero of the issue, in particular the mountaintop removal issue in West Virginia.
Yeah, true.
There couldn't be a bigger difference between two people than what was between Al Gore and George Bush.
True. And one other thing about Nader's method, in 2004 it was interesting because he did very much focus a lot of his energy on reaching out to the right wing, and he was pulling some disenfranchised conservatives from their base, at least if not voting, they're at least thinking differently, because he got on Sean Hannity's show and he got into Pat Buchanan's magazine and he debated these people with a lot of skill and a lot of wise words. So,
well, you know, the so-called traditional rock rib Republicans have as much or more to fear from the neocons or the theocons or whatever we care to call them these days than a lot of us liberals, because George Bush is a greater threat to NRA members than Bill Clinton ever was.
Yep. And there are a lot of hunters and fishermen who are very angry. They're joining all these environmental groups because they see how this fossil fuel-funded administration, you know, what all these giant coal projects and oil projects and logging projects are doing to the places they want to be in the natural
world. Where are you going to hunt once the Bush administration's logged out the national forests?
Right. And they know of the cuts to the Small Business Association, or at least how that money's being redistributed upwards towards larger corporations and away from smaller business people. This administration is not only not Christian, it's not conservative. They have nothing to do with the traditional conservative values.
There's no doubt that it's all a facade.
Mm-hmm.
aimed at a larger goal, and that's, you know, that's one of the sad things. The right wing, the hardcores, the so-called social conservatives, they're nothing more than cannon fodder, Preston.
Mm-hmm.
That's all they are.
Yep, that's right.
And they're being sent out there and used. And if they would look up, they would you know, I don't necessarily want to join hands and sing kumbaya with the social conservatives by any stretch of the imagination, but if they looked up and realized how cynically, how coldly, and how cruelly they're being used, I can't imagine that they would continue to participate in the process.
Yeah.
But there's a reason that I call it the religion industry.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a story in front of me right now from... The American Family Association. God, I hate these people. Headline, Liberals want to force taxpayers to fund their programming. And it's about a move that's afoot by Move On to get folks to make sure that Congress continues funding of NPR and PBS.
Right. You know, I'm so happy to see the response that Move On generated to protect NPR and PBS. They got something like they got over 300,000 people to sign on a petition.
Well, and that's what I've got on this press release here. We're starting our efforts late. We're nearly 400,000 signatures behind. Help us play catch up. Sign your petition today, then forward this to family and friends in your church.
Right. Well, you got to admire their activism. And that's something we can learn from the Ditto heads at large. I mean, they never have.
Well, there's
like,
so many.
I'm sorry.
There's so many things. No, there's so many things we can learn from them, Preston. And sometimes it's very frustrating. I don't mind saying. I've said it a million times before. I'll say it. I'll probably wind up saying it a million times more. If this operation, if the Horn was out there trumpeting right wing politics, we would not be able to breathe for the money we'd be buried in.
Right. Well, you know,
we are, however, liberals, and it becomes a dramatically different matter that way.
And it shouldn't be so. We definitely, you know, we're always looking toward, you know, what should some politician be doing, or what can we do about the corporate media, and so awful, but we've got these opportunities to do things ourselves. We, you know, if we could be more generous or redirect our own, you know, whatever disposable income we might have to important projects like this, I'd like to see MoveOn.org and FAIR and Z Magazine and the Utney Reader and all of them start cross-pollinating with you. I mean,
and that's the way I believe, you know, it has to work. It has to work.
That's the only thing that'll give us, you know, the sort of.
But in the long run, you know, I can write an email here and an email there, Preston.
Right.
But it's when the grass, again, it turns into a grassroots effort. You know, people need to ask, you know, why aren't you, ask these large organizations with all of this money, why are you not supporting the people who support you?
Right. I mean
does that make sense?
The unions, the environmentalists, the civil rights people, they should be pouring money into progressive media efforts like yours. It really should not be an issue. You know, the issue should be where you should be spending your $100,000 marketing budget, you know. Or,
well, exactly.
That's where we should be at.
And one of the beautiful things about what we're doing here, and I guess maybe this is a little bit of inside baseball, but I'll go ahead and say it. I heard somewhere along the way that back before the bankruptcy, and I don't know if it's accurate or not, but I heard that Air America was spending something on the order of $80,000 a day.
Wow. I don't know.
And again, I don't know if that's true or not, but the fact of the matter is, because we operate on a different model, you know, we are lean and mean, as the saying goes, you know, you give me a week of that $80,000 a day, and I'll run we'll run this network for a couple of years. Not months, years.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I have no idea what all the expenses were entailed in Air America, but that's another organization, though. Whatever they were spending, it should not have gone bankrupt. They've got enough people who know the value of it. They're always talking about their love for it. You know, we've got to write the checks for it, you know, buy their their book bags and all that stuff. And I put in a good word for you, actually, on their websites today.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I put in links to headonradio.com, and I'm sure some people are kind of like, oh, that's a competition. But, you know, we've got to get over that hyper-competitiveness and start to learn cooperation.
That model, Preston, that model will not work in what we are attempting to do. The model of competition, the model of, you know, I got to beat you,
right.
You know, it's not going to work on this side. It may work in conservative or right-wing radio where Savage competes with Hannity, who competes with O'Reilly, who competes with Limbaugh.
Yeah.
But it will not work here. You know, I have as much regard for what goes on at Nova M. Sam Cedar is an absolute pro. You know, Stephanie Miller makes me cackle like a hen laying eggs.
Yeah, and it's great to see Tom Hartman getting that larger platform.
Absolutely. You know, and Tom, Tom's earned it.
Yeah.
And he deserves that support. What we've got to do, though, is we've got to create a way to organically, I mean, if, and there's a big if involved with this, Preston, if we actually believe in the message more than we believe in cults of personality.
Right.
Then we have got to all advance each other's causes. That was what was so disgusting about what Ed Schultz did last week.
That was a problem for sure. I hope.
You know, I'm not so crazy about some of Ed's policies, but you know what? Do what you're doing, Ed.
Right. And I hope there can be some reconciliation there, because you know, he's done a lot for the union movement, and he's really, he's doing a lot of good work in so many ways. So, you know, we're all going to make mistakes. We're all going to have our moments of anger and fear and all that kind of stuff. But I think he's going to plow through it, and he's going to keep doing good work. I'm sure of it.
Yeah, and so is Sam Cedar.
Yeah.
And so is Tom Hartman. So is Mike Malloy. So is Randy. So is Stephanie.
Yeah.
And, you know, little old us, the horn out here laboring along in relative obscurity.
And you know, there are even some right-wing hosts who are doing, at least in moments, some good work. We've got one here locally named Lee Roberts. He only has a weekend show, but he is very fair when dissenting callers call in. He doesn't try to bully us or twist our words. We just say our piece. He says his. And some things we do share views on, like renewable energy and supporting family farms and things of that nature. Even some of them are coming out against the war. I actually heard Michael Savage making fun of war profiteers, and I can't stand
that. Now, some of this, Preston, remember, some of this is them... is a matter of realizing that you're dealing with a glutted market, and with public opinion numbers being what they are. Trying to stay alive. I've listened off and on to Savage for several years, and back before the November 2004 election, he'd get on the air and excoriate George Bush. Just ride him up one wall and down the other, knowing full well that not a single one of his listeners would ever not vote for him.
Okay.
But it creates an aura of independence, if you will.
True. True.
So I'm a little bit of a cynic, but I do recognize some of this for what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, anyway, Preston, I thank you very much for your time. I do need to roll on, but I always love hearing from you, and thanks for the wide-ranging conversation.
Likewise, Bob. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye now. And we roll on. Further conversation on what is America's only real, live, honest-to-God conversation radio. Jim. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Howdy.
I'm sorry, I dozed off.
Well, I'm sorry you did.
Forgive me. Initially, you were talking about, I think, in the first part of your program, Britney Spears?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I could care if she has a bikini waxing with a weed whacker. Tell you the truth, and
there are people who would pay to see that.
Well, I mean, you know, I certainly wouldn't. And she reminds me of one of the Manson girls, actually. That's who she looks like. And you had mentioned Lou Dobbs, and there's something I want to say in his defense. And he was talking about the credit card company, and he said, under pressure from lobbyists, Congress has turned its back on its core constituency by passing revised bankruptcy law. Our representatives demonstrate yet again that they align themselves not with the voters, but with special interest groups and lobbyists. In this case, the law, which restricts the ability of the middle class, working class Americans to seek financial protection via bankruptcy filings, was virtually handicrafted by lobbyists who were working for the sole benefit of the credit card companies. And if you really want to find the bet and wire in this bankruptcy bill, it's, of course, our friend Joe Biden from Delaware.
Yeah.
And it's not Lou Dobbs. And Lou Dobbs goes on to point out on page 60 how a majority of the people who have to file bankruptcy do so because of medical catastrophe and not
right.
because they're out.
And that medical catastrophe strikes people within, and a lot of folks don't understand this, Jim, but those medical filings are not all by people who don't have any health insurance in the first place.
And
you can have
says,
perfectly...
And he says this, despite the fact that... enormous bills associated with treatment. This is by the fact the majority of the filters had insurance coverage, which apparently wasn't good enough. Of course, even minimal health insurance coverage is getting harder and harder to come by. And it says, how does Congress justify this new law? By claiming that it forces people to be more fiscally responsible than to pay off their debt? The claim would hold a lot more weight than if it hadn't come back from a body that had managed to run for $412 billion worth of deficit, the biggest in this country's history.
I understand
so, I mean,
that.
No,
I
you can't really excoriate Lou Dobbs on any point. I think Lou Dobbs has hit it right on the head there. And
Lou Dobbs is still open to criticism, Jim, because his obsession with hating people who work for $2.50 an hour is an obscenity.
Oh, I don't know anything about that, and I'm not going to even address that.
Well, you know, you can't turn Lou Dobbs on without him complaining about the illegal aliens in America.
I've never really heard him say that, and I watch all the networks except Fox.
Well, turn him on any night this week, and you or any week, and you will find some portion of his program dedicated to complaining about our border crisis,
well,
or our illegal alien crisis.
He may have some legal. He may have some valid points on that. That's just my own personal opinion, because you know.
Well, you know, but
you and I don't see eye to eye on a lot of things, and this is.
Well, that's all right.
And, you know,
but the fact of the matter is
here, and I don't see Lou Dobbs in the same light that you do. Okay.
Well, I've watched him for a number of years, Jim, and you know what? He was out there beating the drum for George Bush in 2000, and he was out there beating the drum for George Bush in 2004.
Well,
and I mark my words, he will beat the drum for whoever the Republicans nominate in 2008.
I don't know about that. He could have his Damascus Road experience. Who knows? Who's to say? I can't predict the future. I have no palantir at which I can gaze and view and know what this man's mind is working on. I don't.
Well, that's the thing. It's not so much looking into the future, but looking at his past. And he performs according to Hoyle at every turn.
Well, all I can say is the man has put his money where his mouth is in his book, and it's there in writing. And I would suggest that you read it, because it makes a lot of good sense. And a lot of what he says sounds like the transcript of your own program.
Well, I have actually, Jim, I have read his book, The War on the Middle Class.
Well, like I say, you two have a lot more in common than you think. And moving on to another subject, you know, about all this torture business, I don't understand it. Now, if we were back to the days of Beria and the fellows of the Lubyanka, you know, Beria, Stalin, Pinkston, who said that if you give me one night with this guy, I can have him confessing he's the king of England.
Right.
Well,
and he was, and what he said was true.
Well, yeah, exactly. But you know, we've moved beyond that. I mean, come on. What's happened to modified scopolamine, non-lethal curare, and sodium pentothal? I mean, I don't.
Well,
think
that,
they have.
Yeah,
to
that question. That,
about things.
Yeah, that question. That question has been put on this program before, and we still don't have a valid answer to that. There are a lot of drugs out there, and probably ones that we don't even know about, Jim, that you can load up a person and have them sing like a canary. You don't have to soak them with freezing cold water, put them in a 50-degree room, and rub them with faux menstrual blood, you know, because they're Arabic.
Well, I mean,
and all of that's been done.
But, you know, it's not very efficient. And I don't.
It's not only not efficient, it's an exercise in pure sadism, isn't it?
It's a waste of manpower. And it's just,
but it's also sadistic. It's
well,
done. It's
yeah.
not done to get information. It's done to be purely cruel.
Well, I believe in more efficient ways. You know, better things through better living through chemistry. I mean, if you have somebody and you need information from them, there are much more sophisticated and non-lethal ways of doing so, and they won't even know they've done a thing.
Yeah, I mean, there are drugs that are used in so-called modern medical procedures on an outpatient basis. You get the drug, they do the procedure, and you were awake, and you talked like answered every question that was put to you, and you have no memory of it whatsoever.
That's
and
right.
it's used every day, thousands of times in America. It's called Versed.
And I don't know why these people have to get in there and get into the harder details of interrogation, because, I mean, you know, anybody, when they look at some of those instruments they use, is going to say anything you want to say. I mean, if you really want accurate information, you do it painlessly. That's
well, that makes perfectly good sense, and you say you don't know why they do it, but I suspect in your heart of hearts, Jim, that you do.
Not really, because to tell you the truth,
These are some cruel...
I really can't say it one way or the other, because I'm not a sadistic person. If I were to get information from someone, and let me put it this way, there are good ways and there are bad ways to do it. And I can't see leaving any scars or marks. I don't believe in allowing someone to see me do it, if you know what I mean.
Well, yeah. But what I'm dealing...
Something nasty to do, I'm going to do it in a way in such that I'm not going to leave any marks. You follow me?
Well, I understand that. That's like beating a guy with a pillowcase full of ivory soap.
Well, you know, I would not be in darkness of noon. I would not be Gletkin. I would be more like The Other God, the one-off, if you've read that book, A Darkness at Noon by Arthur Kirschler. It's a very good book, came out in 1940. And
but
the only other thing I had to say is about Ralph Nader. My God, I just wish he would go away, 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 away. Because I still blame his sorry ass for having to deal with this idiot we've got up there right now.
Well, there are a lot who do, and he does bear. He bears some responsibility for this. There's no getting around
damn
it.
Damn right
Jim.
He does. And I'll tell you one thing. I would open the door to George Bush before I would Ralph Nader.
Now, that's saying something, Jim. Coming from you, that is saying something.
Well, I don't mind saying something, because you know how I feel about George. I mean, you know, I'm not going to hurt the guy. I just hope he goes away. But Nader, you know, to err is human. To repent is fine. But to persist is devilish. And that is exactly what this man is doing. He is persisting in getting another Republican elected, and he is persisting in interfering with, you know, getting Democrats in positions where they need to be. While he
decides
capitalism, Ralph Nader has all of his stock in Cisco Systems. He's very much a part of it. He's as big on Wall Street as anybody.
Oh, nobody ever said Ralph wasn't rich. That's why he was able to do what he did with his life.
You
open the door to a larger debate, though, Jim, and that is this question of, you know, ideological purity or whatever you want to call it. There are those out there, and some of them fairly prominent, who say things like, Hillary must be the nominee. And if you're not supporting Hillary, that means you want another Republican to win in November 2008. I don't subscribe to that.
Well, you know, I have a great deal of respect for Mrs. Clinton. I don't call her Hillary. I call her Mrs. Clinton. That's her name to me. I mean, she took absolute crap and made sugar out of it with what her husband did to her. And I think she's a very capable person. She is very focused. And she has basically said, if you don't want me, don't vote for me. And she's not trying to solve.
Well, and that's either. And that's why we're going to have a primary process. You know, but again, there are those out there who say, you know, you got to support her in the primary. And, you know, if she winds up being the Democratic nominee, I will gladly vote for her.
I hope she does. And I think it's time for a woman for ability. It's time to have a woman as president of this country. And I think it's time to stand the process on its head, you know, whatever it takes, because I think she brings that much to the table. I really do. And I think it's time that it is her time. A lot of people might not like this, and if they don't like what I have to say, I don't care. But that's
well, I understand that, and we are at the top of the hour and actually a little past it. Thanks, Jim.
See you, buddy.
All right, bye now. I believe in primaries. I will not support Hillary in the primary. I won't do it for a variety of reasons. But, as I said, I don't want another damn Republican in the White House after November 2008. If she's the nominee, she'll have my support. Pretty easy, isn't it? I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network. More of your calls when we come back. If you're on hold, stay that way.
This is the Quality News Network. Well, good news from the highest peak in Oregon today. Those three climbers and their Labrador Retriever were rescued on Mount Hood. The man, two women, and dog are walking down the mountain on their own feet. They should be down in about 5 to 7 hours. They spent the night huddled together to brave gale force winds and blinding snow. Officials said that they did everything right, including carrying a mountain locator unit, kind of like an EPIRB. That's better news than was reported in December, when three climbers died on that very same mountain. Avalanches over the weekend in Montana, Utah, and Idaho have killed 6 people. Dozens more were rescued by friends and emergency personnel. Well, President Bush honored the 275th birthday of the nation's first president today, likening George Washington's long struggle that gave birth to a nation to the war on global terrorism. The Roman Catholic Diocese of San Diego said in a letter to parishioners this weekend that it is considering declaring bankruptcy to avoid going to trial on more than 140 lawsuits alleging sexual abuse by priests. 2 airport buses collided head-on in the dark on the road surrounding the Fort Lauderdale-Hollywood International Airport. This was on Sunday evening. The driver of one bus and a passenger in the other died. Several other passengers were injured, 2 critically. The Justice Department is saying that there are 21,000 gangs in the United States. They've got 700,000 members, and they're using the Internet as a recruitment tool. Insurgents launched a brazen coordinated attack in the U.S. combat post today, sending in a suicide bomber and clashing with American troops. 2 U.S. soldiers were killed and 17 wounded. The attack came on a day when a string of car bombs and other attacks claimed nearly 41 civilian lives in Baghdad and elsewhere. Meanwhile, on Saturday, an Iraqi government spokesman announced violence in Baghdad had declined 80%. On a train traveling from New Delhi to Pakistan, 67 train passengers were killed in a fire sparked by 2 firebombs. The explosions came on the eve of a visit by Pakistan's foreign minister, who called the attacks a horrendous act of terrorism. Most of the victims were Pakistani nationals taking the cross-border train home. Pakistan's railway minister said, quote, "This is an attempt to derail the improving relationship between India and Pakistan," end quote. Nonetheless, leaders on both nations pressed ahead with their peace talks. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I'm here to ask you a question. Has one of your friends or relatives sent you a DVD from another country and you discover that it won't play in your machine? At the Duplication Connection, we can convert any country-coded DVD to play in the U.S. We can also convert your DVDs to play in any country on the planet. Call me at the Duplication Connection at area code 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
Don't dread the Fed. Sure, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. Seems like it happens every day around noon. But does that affect your home loan? Not necessarily. Talk to the pros at Gold Coast Financial. They can help you bid your dread of interest rates goodbye. Don't wait another minute. Start living in your dream home while sending your interest rate nightmares packing. Gold Coast Financial. 649-8757. 649-8757. Gold Coast Financial. 831-649-8757.
Russia announced today it would again delay work on Iran's nuclear reactor, this time because it says Tehran is behind with payments. New Jersey's law permitting same-sex civil unions went into effect at midnight today. Dozens of city halls throughout the state stayed open late to allow couples to apply for licenses. Connecticut and Vermont also allow same-sex civil unions. Massachusetts is the only state in the U.S. to permit same-sex marriage. A group of respected astronomers this week is calling on the UN to develop a program to deal with asteroid threats to Earth. Scientists say a worldwide system should be developed. Now you've got more reasons to enjoy that cup of hot cocoa. Scientists are saying it increases the blood flow, which leads to improved heart and brain function. The Japanese whaling ship stranded in Antarctic waters since last week continues to refuse help from the U.S. Coast Guard and Greenpeace, even though there are fears the vessel will begin leaking oil into the pristine waters. New Zealand's prime minister is registering concerns for an environmental disaster. Japanese authorities are ignoring them. German authorities are considering banning smoking while driving. They say that they are concerned about smokers being distracted, as well as the danger of secondhand smoke for passengers. Budget airline JetBlue continues to cancel flights today. They're still having technical difficulties. This is the Quality News Network. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Michael Coleman.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
I don't know where the time goes, but we've got still got some folks on hold, and we will, I promise, get to you all. Before we do go back to the phones, I like to toss a little stuff in as I can, as I see fit, in between the conversations. And do you remember when it was reported a few years ago that, and it tells you a little bit about who he feels comfortable with, when it was reported by Haaretz that George Bush had claimed while he was in Israel that God was talking to him. You remember it very well, I'm sure. God told me to strike at Osama, and I did, and God is telling me to strike at Saddam, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, it was very disturbing because it made it abundantly clear that the ostensible president of the United States heard voices. And that's just, yeah, a lot disturbing. Who am I trying to kid? Well, there's a new one out, and again, it's coming out of Haaretz in Israel. There is a new book out, relatively new, I suppose. I think it's still just in Hebrew, but it is by a man named Yuri Don, who was a close associate of Ariel Sharon. The name of the book is Ariel Sharon, An Intimate Portrait. I don't know, maybe it is in English. I'm not sure. But anyway, that's Ariel Sharon, An Intimate Portrait. And the author, who has passed away apparently, died this past December, Yuri Don did. But he tells some stories of his interaction with Ariel Sharon, and he also, George Bush comes into play. Max Blumenthal reporting this at maxblumenthal.com. He writes, legendary Israeli reporter Uri Don's posthumous biography of Ariel Sharon, An Intimate Portrait, also contains a revealing portrait of the decider. And in the book, this is the quote, and again, put this in context, for heaven's sakes. Put it in context with the reporting done, and I know a lot of you are skeptical about it, but Capitol Hill Blue, back when they reported that when issues of constitutionality and civil liberties were being raised, George Bush threw one of his legendary temper tantrums and screamed, "Quit waving the Constitution in my face! It's just a GD piece of paper." Remember that? And couple it, like I said, with the business about God talking to him. Well, this is the quote from Yuri Don's Ariel Sharon, An Intimate Portrait. Speaking of George Bush, with whom Sharon developed a very close relationship, this is the story from Haaretz, the quote, Yuri Don recalls that Sharon's delicacy made him reluctant to repeat what the president had told him when they discussed Osama bin Laden. So this is George Bush speaking to Ariel Sharon. And Ariel Sharon apparently was not a very coarse man, unless it came to, you know, killing, mayhem, and slaughters at Shabra and Shatila. Anyway, finally, he relented. And here is what the leader of the Western world, valiant warrior in the Battle of Cultures, promised to do to bin Laden if he caught him. George Bush said to Ariel Sharon, who then reported it to Uri Don, a quote, I will screw him in the ass. And, of course, this is the same guy, I think it was Newsweek, that reported that at one point, March 2002, back before George was ever admitting that he wanted to invade Iraq, there was a roundtable going on with some cabinet ministers, and somebody said, but sir, what about Saddam Hussein? And George said, F him, we're taking him out. You know, this is the guy whose childhood friends say that when the rains would come and the frogs would come hopping out, they would capture frogs and put M-80s up their backsides and light them and throw them in the air to watch the frogs blow up. This is the guy who can't tell that a microphone is open and swears openly at a meeting of heads of state, and says things to things like China's a big country. Somebody get on the phone and just tell them to stop this, Brown Word. You remember that, too. Well, this may be the greatest of all greatest hits. George Bush said to Ariel Sharon that if we could only catch bin Laden, quote, "I will screw him in the ass." Dr. Freud, emergency, come right away. Jesus. Let's go back to the phones. Teresa is calling from Canada. Teresa, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks for taking my call, Bob.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
I was calling to respond to Susan's call about the appalling lack of treatment for the veterans. She didn't need to apologize for crying. More people should be crying about that. But while I was on hold, I heard Jim was saying something about Lou Dobbs has a new book out.
Well, it's been out for a while, yes. It's called The War on the Middle Class.
Oh, okay. No, I haven't read it, but my sense is that it shouldn't be tossed aside lightly. It should be hurled with great force.
Well said.
I can't believe that Jim is actually watching him if he says he's never heard him say anything on immigration.
I noticed, Friday...
About that.
Friday night I heard him... Well, he had... one of the most loathsome anti-poor working class people congressmen in American history on his Tom Tancredo from Colorado.
Oh,
I mean, the man is just...
Yes, I've heard of him.
And, well, you know, he had him on there complaining about, you know, the illegals are going to get credit cards. And it's every night with Lou Dobbs. Every night he's got a story about how awful and rotten and sleazy and scummy and dirty... Mexican people are.
And he can talk about any news story and somehow twist it around, like Britney shaving her head. Well, you know, the Mexicans do that too. Like he's, I don't know, he's kind of a one-trick pony in my mind with that.
Well, that's exactly it. That's why it's an issue every night on his program.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate some of the stuff that he's saying now, but I'm cynical and I'm skeptical of it, Teresa. I'm afraid that he's trying. Well, there are a lot of Republicans out there who are trying to capture the moniker of populist.
Oh, exactly. Like he was right wing right from the beginning. Like I've been watching CNN for years, unfortunately, just to know what the enemy's saying, but. Like he's just looking at his ratings and that, and like he pays lip service to, you know, he bashes Bush a little bit and that, but I don't know. I think he's the same as the rest.
Well, it was kind of fun to watch him poking Wolf Blitzer with a sharp stick, saying, you know, there won't be anything about Anna Nicole Smith on my program.
Yeah, that was good. I'm so tired of hearing about her. But
there's a fake populism to what he's doing that is just it's nothing but wolf in sheep's clothing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But with CNN in general, not just CNN, all the mainstream media, like they're not telling the American people anything. Like you listen to the news up here, like you hear things that you'll never hear down there.
Oh, I don't
right.
Doubt it at all.
So
I turned on. Go ahead. I'm sorry. No, please, go ahead.
No, the next demonstration should not be in Washington. Go to CNN's headquarters and see if they can... watch how they can shuck and dive to avoid reporting it.
That would be fun. I turned on CNN just this afternoon, because I keep hoping that I'll actually see some news.
No. But the, okay, I feel bad for the climbers. But my God, that should be like a 2-3 minute update every hour.
But it's worse than that, Teresa. They preempted the climber story today to talk about a 10-car pileup on the Dolphin Expressway outside Miami.
God, how many times in America do big pileups happen? Like they happen up here a lot, and you're 10 times the population down there.
It's a car wreck.
Searching for yeah. Oh, there was a fire on there today. some robber went into a strip mall. Now, they don't know what happened to him, but the strip mall was on fire. So they went with that, like live coverage, for a long time, and just to watch the building burn. You know, that's all appropriate. Nero fiddling while Rome burns. But it's like they're making a concerted effort to find anything to, you know, to...
Well,
you know,
I get the... Having
any object in front of the viewers, so look at that.
Look, a squirrel!
Yeah. I know. Or, you know, poor Anna Nicole. Look at these two big things. Yeah.
Oh, God. Well, and it is. I mean, can't they just put up a stationary picture of Anna Nicole Smith, something that doesn't involve a bunch of cleavage, and you know, put a banner under it that says "still dead," and tell their story. And I mean, it's the same stock runway footage of her walking and smiling.
And she's like, even the grave yawns for her. Like, okay, she's embalmed now, but she's not buried yet. Like, sorry for her.
They've opened the grave. They've opened the grave. Okay, they've put in the vault.
I know.
Team coverage of Anna Nicole Smith.
To the judge.
So you're telling me the CBC doesn't do this to you?
Well, they'll report it, but in a proper context, like, you know.
Well, I get the no.
Look what they're going on about.
I tried my hand at that type of thing.
Like.
No, I was just going to say, I tried my hand at journalism once upon a time,
mm-hmm.
and was fairly good at it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? I came away with a lot of respect for the real journalists,
yeah.
Of which I was trying to be one, because it is hard, hard work. There's a lot of skull sweat involved. There's a lot of lying involved, and you've got to have a BS detector as big as the moon.
Yeah.
And you've got to wade through stuff, and you've got to, and you know, reporting stories on the economy, reporting stories on the background of the war is hard work. And if you work for Fox or CNN or any of these outfits, you can always get away with I don't know, it seems to be the Peter principle in its grandest form. That you only make it to CNN when you've proved yourself utterly incompetent, or Fox, I mean, let's be fair,
mm-hmm.
When you proved yourself utterly incompetent at doing real journalism.
Oh, well, exactly. Like, they're good at tap dancing. Like, it's amazing to watch them turn themselves into pretzels to try and, make a bad story about Bush into something not so bad.
Well, and frankly, I don't know. I may make some people angry, Teresa, but if I see Solenoid O'Brien one more time on CNN...
Oh, I don't like her.
...with her little special about Martin Luther King, I mm-hmm. am going to scream.
Yeah. And what about Paula Zahn? What's her thing tonight? It was... I didn't watch it, of course, but it was something like... not rap, hip-hop, music or poison. Like, that's news.
Oh, that's news.
Yeah. Oh, and that's not racist. No. Like,
no, and the funny thing is...
Anderson Cooper, too. Like, I had a little bit of respect for him when he seemed like he cared at the beginning when Katrina was actually happening. But now he just goes down there for fluff pieces. The last time
I kind of missed that racist guy. Who was he? Came on at 10 o'clock, had the glasses... Anderson Cooper replaced him. Remember a couple of years ago?
Oh, Aaron
Brown.
Yeah.
Poor man. Whatever happened to him?
Oh, he was too honest. I think he ended up a news writer or something. He did land on his feet. He actually wrote an article. I can't remember which publication it was in, but I read it and. You know, he has some choice things to say about CNN, similar to what we are. He was, you know, he was tired of the fluff pieces and everything. But, yeah, like, anybody past Easton there is gone. And Wolf Blitzer, too, the way he, you know.
Well, he's just a cartoon anymore.
The thing with Dick Cheney, like, scared of when he started backtracking, well, no, we like you, daughter. I didn't mean anything.
Don't hit me.
Yeah, I know. Sitting there with his pink diaper on.
Just pathetic.
God.
Teresa, so good to hear from you. Have a wonderful evening. Hope we'll hear from you again soon.
Okay.
All right. Later. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Teresa calling in from Canada, and to Steve. Steve, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks a lot. I'm a first-time caller.
Welcome.
Oh,
hope it won't be your last.
Oh, I'd like to talk to you a couple minutes about politics, peace, and stupidity.
Okay.
Not necessarily in that order, but politics first. I heard your comment on Hillary, and I agree 1,000% as far as, you know, she's not my number one choice, but if she gets the nomination, I'm going to have to vote for her. I'd like to know why everybody, the media, ignores Kucinich. I mean, here's a man that, you know, did not vote for the war. He's a man that wants to start a Department of Peace. He's got a 12-point plan to end the war, and he totally gets ignored. What do you
think? You're absolutely right. I'm proud of the fact that we have not ignored him. Frankly, he's my number one guy. And I get some grief from other so-called liberals for saying that, Steve. But when you look at Dennis Kucinich, you've got a guy who has been actively involved in trying to make people's lives better through the political process since he was, 26 years old. There is not a single politician contemplating the presidency anywhere in this country who has a record like that and has been at it that long.
Exactly.
Not Hillary, not Obama, none of them.
Well, that's the way my wife and I feel. We, you know, Kucinich is our number one, and then I think after him, at least as far as my opinion is, I'm going for Obama, and I don't buy the no experience line about, you know, he's young and inexperienced. I think that's a benefit because he's not affected by all the you know, bullshit pollution in Washington. And as far as foreign affairs experience or insider experience, look at what we have now. I mean, we have a man in power. He's got his finger on the button, but he can't pronounce the word nuclear. We have a president with the mind of a 12-year-old child, and people worry about, well, you know, Obama isn't very experienced. The whole thing is silly. It's silliness. And so I guess that's our spin. I mean, Hillary, as far as the vote goes, her vote for the war, what I don't understand is, okay, I'm just a common factory worker. I'm stupid. Okay, I don't have insider information. I listen to the news, but all the stuff leading up to the war in Iraq, we could see through it. Me and my friends could see through it. You know, people can see through it. So how can these senators even say that they made a mistake? You know that they either saw through it and lied about it because they wanted to get, you know, position themselves politically, or they were for it and they're just as evil as Bush. But I don't buy this.
Well, is there a third alternative, Steve? Is it possible that they did it out of pure unmitigated fear?
For political fear?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, it took a lot of courage for the likes of Dennis Kucinich in the House, and he led, 100 members of the House in voting against it or something near that. And the people like Bob Graham was chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee when the Iraq War resolution was ramrodded through the Congress, and he voted against it.
Wow.
Now, at that point, do we credit it to a lack of debate, to a lack of sober consideration, or at some point do we have to say that there were people who were just afraid? And frankly, if that applies to Hillary, I wouldn't be too terribly surprised, because there she was, freshman senator from New York, the smoking rubble. You know, James Carville and Hillary and Hillary's supporters have trotted out the smoking rubble of the World Trade Center as why she voted for the Iraq War, which runs contrary to everything that every liberal, every Democrat, every progressive has said, which is, you know, Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11, and now you got Hillary doing it.
Right. Exactly.
So, I mean, my only answer there is it was done out of political cowardice.
Right.
Because she walks around, bless her heart, and I mean that sincerely, bless her heart, she walks around with a target on her back. And there is an entire industry, not even a cottage industry, a full-blown, multi-million-dollar, maybe billion-dollar funded right-wing industry whose sole goal is to attack Hillary some way, somehow, every day. And she knows it. And she knew that she would be plastered and pilloried and taken from pillar to post if she voted against that war, and it was a politically calculated move that she didn't, or that she did vote for the war.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. That's a very good point. And you know, I think she's a very sharp lady. And, you know, I've always been a fan of hers, but I just think that I'm sorry. This is unforgivable as far as, you know, where I am philosophically and where we come from as far as, you know, being progressives and stuff. That's the no-no. That's one step over the line, and there's no turning back from that. It's not acceptable. An apology is not acceptable. That's an error that just, you know, won't mend itself. So.
Well, I understand that, and there are a lot of people who feel that way, and it really, really upsets the Hillary people when they hear you say something like that, because there's a certain sector out there, Steve, that wants, I don't know, somehow I think we have a yen to have the same sort of coronation that the Republicans had in 2000, where, you know, you had token candidacy by John McCain, but, you know, nothing really beyond that. And it made it easy because there were no other candidates out there cross criticizing others. But, you know, your initial inquiry, why is Dennis Kucinich not getting more attention paid to him? I can't answer. You know, the people making light of the Department of Peace, that is the most serious domestic, well, or foreign policy initiative that has been mentioned probably in this country in the last 40 years.
Yeah, peace has always been controversial, though. You know that.
Not good for business, I guess.
I know. Exactly. But, and you know, the other thing I don't understand, too, and you know, I'm not real politically educated, but I can't understand why the whole thing about the lies leading up to the war and the trumped-up information, why is that not more of a buzz than it is? I know I keep hearing these people say, well, you know, they promised, you know, Nancy Pelosi promised there'd be no talk of impeachment, and I guess I missed the first part of that. I don't know why. Why aren't they, you know, why don't they have this guy tried for war crimes?
Well, I guess because we maintain a national mythos, you know, just because we don't have a big temple to, you know, Athena Parthenos or Poseidon or any other god doesn't mean we don't have our own mythology. And one of those mythologies that we maintain in this country, Steve, is that we don't do war crimes. And like Dear Leader said, we don't do torture. Well, yeah, we do, but we cannot admit it to ourselves. We can't, and we're going to, and the saddest thing out of all that, Steve, is that we are going to continue to do this kind of evil crap until such time as we have a genuine attempt at a national reconciliation with who and what we are.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe that's the short answer, but that's my guess.
But I just don't understand why that isn't an issue on Capitol Hill, why they aren't, you know, with the Democrats in power, why they're not pursuing that. I mean, it's, you know, they impeached Clinton for what he did, but I mean, what Bush did, you know, he had sex with the whole planet. He does it every day. And I just don't understand why, you know, as many people that are up in arms about that, why, you know, and that, you know, we're looking at the result of that, which is the war in Iraq, but we're not looking at the criminal intent that, you know, created that.
Well, I hate to admit it, but I go back to my previous thesis, Steve. Fear. We're afraid to. We have not learned to come out with our teeth bared and because I think there's a lot of people in the Congress, in the higher ups of the party, who don't understand that when you are dealing with a bully, the best way to make a bully stop bullying is to punch him in the mouth. And we haven't learned to do that. We are still in response mode. We're still in counterpunch mode. You'll never see, exactly what you said. They impeached Bill Clinton over lying about sex, and this guy lies about a war that gets, you know, 750,000 people killed, civilians, Americans, the Iraqis, and we can't somehow muster up the courage to say that one is worse than the other, and one is more deserving of engaging the actual principles of the Constitution in order to deal with it.
Yeah. Well, I've heard the phrase many times, worst president ever, and that's exactly the way I feel. Did you hear the story about this, I guess this goes back a year and a half ago or so, about this reporter, Peter Walston with the LA Times, and about his interviewing Bush?
I'm not sure.
Well, there was, I think it happened in Tucson or somewhere, I don't know, it was like June of 05, and this Peter Walston of the LA Times was interviewing Bush. They were asking questions, and it was outdoors, and Walston had sunglasses on. And he started to ask the question, and Bush stopped.
Oh,
said,
yeah.
Are you going to remove those sunglasses? And he said, well, he said, I can if you want me to. And Bush said, well, you don't have to. I'm really into the shade look. I think it's cool. I'm really interested in the shade look. And then Bush looks to the audience, and he says, just so the audience knows, there's no sun here. And Peter Walston says, well, I guess that all depends on your perspective. And, of course, Peter Walston's blind.
Yeah.
This is the idiot.
It took me a minute, but I do remember that.
This
it was
the idiot that, you know, the, quote, majority of America voted for. I'm just...
Well, I know, and early on in his presidency, and I don't even know if you remember this, Steve, but early in his presidency, he went to one of those Kennedy Center honors things or command performance for the president at Ford's Theater. I forget what it was. Stevie Wonder played. And everybody in the room saw George Bush wave to Stevie Wonder.
Oh, my God.
I kid you not. I remember it like it was yesterday. He's not in the same world with us.
How does an intelligent Republican, let's say someone like, who's the most intelligent right wing person that you can think of? I mean, Karl Rove.
You're really calling me on the carpet on that because
okay.
I see him in terms of evil more than intelligent.
The point I'm trying to make: how do these people justify, if you hear George Bush speak, how do they justify his lack of capturing the English language? How do they justify it? Well,
I can answer that question.
He's got a plain way of talking. He's got a plain way, but, you know...
Right. He's just like your next-door neighbor.
Right. He's the decider. But I'm
I don't want my next-door... I like my next-door neighbor. I don't want my next-door neighbor to be president.
Right.
I want a certified, absolute, no questions about it, genius in the Oval Office.
Is that one of the job qualifications? You have to, you know, have a grasp of the English language, and, you know, I mean, you don't have to. I mean, let's not ask for charisma, but at least ask to, you know, pronounce the word nuclear, not say nuclear.
it's gotten to where it is like being poked with you know, struck with hot iron or pinched, you know, just a really nasty little pinch. Every time I hear him say nuclear, I I'm 44 years old, and I've already gotten to where my dad was. I talk to the TV now, and I know it's not a good thing, Steve.
Yeah. Well, I went to the peace march in D.C. last month, my wife and I, the peace surge at the Capitol, and it was wonderful, and the media played it down. They were estimating there was like 300,000 people there. Wonderful, wonderful speakers. Jesse Jackson, Jane Fonda, Tim Robbins, Margaret Waters, on and on and on. It was wonderful. Wonderful crowd, and we hope that we can make the next one again, too. So.
Well, I wanted that was taking place right at a time when I was unable to do any traveling, but I'm hoping that, you know, not just me, but other members of the Horn can make the next one, and there's got to be a next one.
Yes. Absolutely, and people.
Steve, let me. If it's not too personal, I wasn't told by Agnes, my wife, and my lovely wife, and my producer. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Green Camp, Ohio.
It's wonderful.
I'm about 45 miles north of Columbus.
Okay, so you survived. You survived the blizzard then.
Oh yeah. Well, we've still got it around us. We've still got a lot of snow. We love it. Not a problem.
Well, I hope we will hear from you again, and by all means, if you are so inclined, let me implore you to tell your friends about the Horn.
Oh, we will, and I enjoyed your show, and thanks for listening to me rant.
Oh, you're more than welcome any old time you want to.
Okay, my friend.
Thanks, Steve.
Talk to you later.
Have a good evening. And onward to Sarge. Hey, Sarge, sorry you've had to wait so long, man. I'm so sorry.
Okay, Bob, listen, I had a little ear problem while I was on hold, and so I have my really bad ear, so if I say, huh, it's not, I'm having a little hearing problem here, okay?
Are you okay?
Well, I think it'll be okay. I've got, you ever heard a B-52 fire up his engines and only be like 15 feet away with no ear?
I can't say that I have, but if you have, I understand what you're talking about.
I have. And that's, that's what it is. And every once in a while, I'll get this nerve that'll just kind of go spastic in my ear, and it'll swell up, and it'll start bleeding, and it just hits me all the time. And so I had to hang up, call back, and I'm talking with the phone on the ear that I've got inner ear deafness in, so I can barely hear out of it. So.
Okay, so you talk and I'll listen.
But what I wanted to call about, and I'm just going to say what I got to say, and then I'm going to get off because I don't want to continually say ha, 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 okay? But everybody, please go to my website and click on my article. Everyone knows her as Gara. Her name is Judy, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And this weekend, they broke into her FEMA trailer again. They stole every damn thing she owned, thing she owned, and they stole her food. They stole just about everything. They didn't steal her dog, thank God. See, she trains these service dogs for people who need them and who can't afford to get them, and because of all the bureaucracy that's involved in service animals, she gives these dogs to these people after she trains them. So she's done a lot of good work down there. I mean, let's put it this way. Little old Jordan, she's one of several that this lady has saved. And Jim Yancey and myself and Sean Ryan, the folks over at KPHX, Nova M, we've got a drive going for people to donate. And we're trying to help buy her a house and put her in a house where she can have some security, where she can do her work without all the harassments of people breaking in. FEMA refuses to acknowledge she has black mold, even though I was in her trailer and I had to walk out within a minute because the mold was just driving me crazy. And so we're trying to get her into a safe place and get her a decent place to live. So I'm asking people, if they'll go by unreportednews.net, there's a set up there on the column, just read my column, there's a set up there of PayPals. People can donate. If you don't use PayPal, you want to donate, contact me. I will make sure it gets to Jim Yancey. All the money's going to go to Jim. I'm not sending her because these people actually stole her money as well.
Oh, jeez.
So, anybody, please help us. This woman has meant so much to so many, and she's still busting her butt. And I just think it's time we stand up for this hero, because she sure as hell is standing up for us.
I agree. Thank
I'm
you,
gonna go because I really can't hear you too good. So,
okay.
Hey, have a nice time. You get the hell back to West Virginia, son.
I will when I can.
Okay, buddy. Bye bye.
All right, later, Sarge. I'm going to be down here for a little while, but yeah, there's no way around it. Let's keep it rolling. Luke is calling from Knoxville, Tennessee. Hey, Luke, welcome to the program.
Evening, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, doing all right. Well, have you noticed in this whole thing that's been broke this last couple of days, this thing about Walter Reed, where they're talking about the vet, have you noticed that you don't see the name of Jim Nicholson mentioned? Who's the head
conspicuously
of the
absent. Yeah.
The ex-head of the RNC. It's like, I've been looking on some of these shows, and it's like, Where is he? I'd like to see his picture up there. I mean, at least show us his picture. We ain't going to talk to him, you know. Oh, but basically enough, I just wonder how long it's going to be before anybody even mentions he is the head of Veterans Affairs.
Well, it'll only be after George Bush comes out and endorses him by saying he's doing a heck of a job.
Time for anybody to get that medal? Okay.
Yep, and go off to where the undisclosed location, wherever they sent the other Medal of Freedom, Presidential Medal of Freedom winners.
Well, you were talking a minute ago about, my mouth went out there on me. Talking about like I say, there is a daily adventure to see who can get Hillary next. And the thing is, just remember now, it isn't all just the right wing. Just remember now, any night you want to, you can turn on Mr. Matthews on Nutball. And like I say, he's obsessed with nailing Hillary.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Every night. Anything he brings up, he'll bring up that before he'll bring up anything else or something about Hillary.
Oh, yeah. An asteroid has been seen at night and passed within, 15 million miles of Earth, and Hillary's trying to make it hit the planet. Yeah,
But again, Luke, that goes to my previous assertion, and it's one of the things that scares me about her presidential candidacy, and one of the things that makes me afraid that she can't win, is that this industry does exist, and it is in place. And if we thought the Swift voters were bad, we haven't seen anything.
Oh, no. Well, and the thing was, did you get the thing, or I sent you from the fellow, was it Bob Seska, where he was talking about the thing about he was trying to get Gore to run? And
right,
kind of,
yeah.
After you read, like, the first paragraph or two, he brings up a story I think we've talked about before. Whoever gets elected, and we pray, you know, it is Democrat, they're going to be busy that whole first term just trying to unscrew what George Bush has screwed up. I mean,
well,
so
and
that's
and
the first
again,
2-3 years is going to be that.
Well, and it's going if we do not end this war before George, see, I'm convinced, Luke, that this is specific. The current war policy is specifically designed to keep everything in place until George Bush is gone. I mean, he said as much. He admitted it, for the love of God.
I think
it'll be for the next president to fix.
Well, like I say, I'm just scared that the day after the election, when a Democrat's elected, he's going to just pick up the phone and say, get it ran. Send in the bombers.
Well, you know, that's what his daddy did with Somalia. Everybody
yeah.
says, oh, you know, Black Hawk Down was Bill Clinton's fault. No, by God, no.
It was
2 months before he left office, Poppy Bush started the Somalia thing, and he did it specifically to hang that millstone around Bill Clinton's neck.
And you've also noticed this thing this past couple of weeks that some people have mentioned, not a whole lot, but that apparently now that Condi went ahead and made this deal with the North Koreans, which essentially is the exact same deal that Bill Clinton had in place that W came in and canceled.
It is. It's right.
And
you know, food.
The funny thing of that is what is she went around Darth Cheney, and apparently he didn't get to put the kibosh on it. So you got to wonder how much fun there is between the VP's office and the State Department now, because you know he was that way when it was Colin Powell. So Condi apparently, I'd say, is in the doghouse now.
Well, and among other things, I was reminded, I got an email earlier today, and this sort of has something to do with that. I got an email talking about the Iran situation.
Oh.
And the writer pointed out that before...
The one from Larry Johnson?
No.
Oh.
This is before the invasion of Iraq and the Iranians, before the invasion of Iraq, that the Iranians had approached the Bush administration for negotiation, and we, of course, said, no, we don't negotiate with terrorists. Go away.
Oh, a bit ago, you were
and
talking
Iran
about...
was weak at the time. They needed the outreach, and we said no. And that and all of that directly put them in the catbird seat.
Well, it's like saying, you know, there are three spokes to that axis of tourism, as George Bush would say,
yeah.
And we hit the weak one. You know, the two strong ones are the ones that George Bush didn't go after. He didn't go after Iran because they hadn't been starved for 10 years. You know, they hadn't had all their money locked up and everything. And we didn't go after North Korea because they had an army that could, if they really wanted to, like we always said, they could throw a switch and Seoul would disappear. By the next morning, you probably wouldn't be able to find much of Seoul, Korea. But so, of course, we attacked the weak one. We see how well that's gone.
Yeah.
But
go ahead, please.
Well, I was gonna say, I sent you that thing from Larry Johnson. I got to listen to him over the weekend a couple of times, and today I saw Randy had Scott Ritter on. And I know I've seen a couple things lately from Ray McGovern. And I tell you, all three of these guys are guys I fairly well trust on these issues, and they're just kind of waving the red flags. You know, they're saying, look here. Said, don't look away. Said, because as soon as you look away, he'll push the button.
Well, I think there's every reason, there's nothing paranoid about thinking something like that, Luke.
Well, I say
there's every reason in the world to believe that this guy, that he's capable of that kind of vicious, sleazy behavior.
Well, and like I say, and I still think what they're going to end up doing in the end is there's going to be a blast somewhere in Israel, and we're going to scream, Iran did it. And by the time anybody blinks, like I say, we're already going to be attacking. And of course,
well,
we have to do it for stability, of course.
Right.
Right. And you saw the thing today where Hamas and Fatah are apparently not making nice, but they're figuring out how to work together in Palestine. And
right, another
the last thing that Condi wanted.
Well, among other things, it's another glaring example of the Bush administration, in fact, being a uniter. The thing is, they're very good at uniting the people who hate our damn guts.
Yeah. And the thing is, some of these weren't people who hated our guts before, but they do now. You know, at one time, like say,
we sent them a master class on hating. We sent them to a master class on hating America.
It's like say, you just wish that Gore got in, because like say, he could have carried on some of the stuff with that Clinton had, and you know, with between the Israelis and the Palestinians. And if, you know, if he'd got in and put like, and brought Clinton back into it, you know, sort of as an envoy, into the, just to work on that. You wonder if they could have solved that, or at least got it to a livable point, should we say.
Right.
Oh, and a while ago, you know, when you were talking to the fellow a while back, and he was talking about, that under talking about Nader, I went over to my bookshelf, and I pulled out my book, Jews for Buchanan.
Well, yeah, there's that, too.
You know, and it's sort of like...
Kind of a thin book, isn't it?
Well, no, but it was a good book. It really was. That's the one the guy put out, you know, after the 2000 election, showing how apparently all these older Jewish people wound up voting for Pat Buchanan.
Yeah, and Greg Palast has made this abundantly clear. You cannot hang Florida drop it entirely on the doorstep of Ralph Nader.
But I'll tell you one thing though. You always talk about, and we've all talked about, you know, the Democrat Party needs to stand up. I tell you what, I want to see the Green Party stand up one time. And the next time Ralph shows up and says, I want the nomination, I want to see somebody in the Green Party look at him and go, what have you done for us? You know, who have you got elected on the state level?
Well, and that is something.
You can go every 4 years and say, make me your nominee.
The Greens have got to figure out that you don't build a party by becoming president.
No.
I mean, the Lincoln.
You go after the state houses, and you go after the, you know, and the.
You go after county commission seats.
Yeah.
You go after aldermen. You go after.
Oh, some night. I haven't said
dog catcher.
Some night, me and you'll have to sit down and we'll talk about our election down here.
Okay. Hey, Luke, I got to roll on. Right, I got to hit a couple more calls before we go. Thanks, brother.
Have a good evening.
You too. Bye,
bye
now. Just to share an email with you before we jump onto the phones again, and I'm going through as fast as I can. I wanted to share something with you because Luke started with Hillary. Our good friend David in South Carolina wrote me today, and he said, Hillary stopped here today on her, and this is, I guess, Florence, South Carolina. Hillary stopped here today on her first visit to South Carolina since her announcement. I'd never met her before, and my daughter wanted to meet her because they've been reading about U.S. presidents, and then what is any self-respect and political junkie supposed to do anyway? Besides, there was free barbecue and sweet iced tea. Well, you know. I did come away with a little different perspective than I had before. She made one comment that made me sit up and think. She said, quote, Bill and I know how to beat them back. And she does have a point, David says, and even if I disagree with her policies, excuse me, and all that DLC crap, the Clinton campaign team does know how to throw a punch and sure as hell knows how to take one and dish out a harder blow. This may be a painful election season to watch. Don't know if this makes any sense, but I just got home, David says, and thought I'd write down my first impression. She's also the only candidate who's ventured into this part of the state, which is the poorest area. All the others go to Columbia, Greenville, Charleston, and don't stop by this area. I just think she may be ahead right now on tactics. He says he got some decent photos. He says the tea was pretty good. The barbecue was, well, average. We are tough on our barbecue. But no, I don't take anything away from the Clinton team's ability to fight back, but I just wonder if the Republicans have put together such a juggernaut. I mean, it comes out every day. I get these stupid releases from Newsmax.com, and every one is there's at least two or three Hillary stories a day, and they're all negative slasher pieces. Same thing comes out of World Nut Daily. Same thing, Drudge Report. Same thing, Fox. And that's not to speak of the smaller organizations. And that's, you know, so if she's the nominee, you know, I'll vote for her.
But my guy is Dennis Kucinich, because I have a certain amount of idealism that I am not willing to relinquish. And I believe we can be better than we are. And to the extent that I can help Dennis Kucinich with what's going on here at the Horn, I'm going to do it. Because the so-called professional media won't do their damn job. Let's go to Phil, calling from Daytona Beach, Florida. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program. Sorry you had to wait so long.
Oh, glad to be on. Thanks, Bob. I just want to touch on what Luke was talking about, the threat of our attacking Iran, and these very credible guys are once again saying, hey, here it comes. And you mentioned the media. They are doing their job. They work for the military-industrial complex. They work for the Bush administration. So
there's that way of looking at it, too.
Say again?
There is that way of looking at it. I guess I'm talking more of a purist term, Phil.
No, I hear what you're saying. You know, the Fourth Estate got bought up a long time ago, and I'm going to harp on what I always do. We have to be the media. We people. And there's not enough time to change it. We've got to be the media ourselves. They're going after Iran, and it ain't going to happen like someone said earlier, you know, after the 08 election. These guys are going now, and what was it, 2 weeks ago, the third carrier group set sail for the Gulf.
It's going to get mighty crowded there.
It sure is, and these guys are going for it, and we really have to sound the alarms. And another thing, I think, you know, 9/11 truth, there's a heck of a lot of people that are, we've got to start talking about it more, you know, I think, and just say, Jesus, what about Building 7? You know, stuff like that. We've got to, we've got to stop strategizing, man, and just demand, hey, these bastards lied to start a war. You know, 9/11, there's a chance, good chance that they were involved in that to also start the war, you know. And I think we just have to take the gloves off, Bob, you know, and be the media ourselves and do every little thing we can. I made some labels today, you know, the 80 labels per sheet, return address. Mm-hmm. And what I do is I typed on it, Americans are waking up, www.911weknow.com. And I stick them on the envelopes, the junk mail envelopes. When I pay my bills, I stick them on that. You know, every little bit, you know.
Well, I know. I got an email a while back from a guy who's gone one step simpler in a way, Phil. He's taking, whenever he gets a pocket full of currency. I don't even know how to reach the guy because maybe it's a federal felony. Homeland Security's listening, you know.
Yeah.
But he writes every single piece of currency that comes through his pocket. He's got a little Sharpie and he writes in bold black letters across in the margins of the bill, "Impeach Bush now."
Yes. We have to do more, people. We have to do as much as we can to be the media. And we've got to remove these guys because they are on a mission. That mission was the PNAC plan, Afghanistan, Iraq, and Iran. And they have not missed a beat. These guys are not incompetent. All this is by plan. You know, the quagmire, everything, and all these sideshows are planned. You know, forget Hillary. Damn it. We've got to stop these guys from starting World War III now. And I know you have other callers, so...
Well, we're at the end of the show, and I've got to roll.
Sorry, guys.
Thank you, Phil.
Hold. Well,
thank you, Phil. Thank you very kindly. Have a wonderful night.
One more plug, Bob, on that movie. Everybody go to Google, click on video, and type in Everybody's Got to Learn Sometime. It ties the PNAC guys to the Florida stolen election and the 9/11 attacks. It puts all the dots together.
Okay, thanks, Phil.
Thank you, Bob. Glad you're back.
Bye now.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And we will be back again tomorrow night at the same time. Stay tuned. Jeff Allen Wolf coming your way at immediately following this program. Thanks to everybody who participated tonight. It was very, very kind of you. I'm excited to be back. And, of course, my lovely, darling, talented wife, Agnes, produced. John Fox engineered. Peter Godbold is our IT professional. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org has a fundraiser going on. Do your part, please, because everything you hear streamed from the horn, he is responsible for. And he never asks you, never sends a bill. It's up to you to do it on your own. All the programming on the horn comes to you thanks to the support of thousands of members of the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters. They're out there building the American dream every day. And RMR, it's all for you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network. You're listening to the Venture 3 Radio Network.
FEMA wants over $300 million in Katrina aid back. Feingold exonerates fellow Democrats for failing to play hardball to end Iraq war. House schedules vote on Iraq resolution. Another U.S. copter set down in Iraq. Libby trial reveals Cheney's temper. Cheney's handwritten notes implicate Bush in plame affair. Iran test fires Russian air defense missiles. Billions given away in Baghdad free-for-all, that's revealed. U.S. companies prepare for bird flu pandemic. U.S. should weigh war on terrorism tax, says Lieberman. Gore says Bush administration paying scientists to dispute global warming. Global warming debate spurs Oregon title tiff. Delaware scientists' view on climate change criticized. Edwards takes a jump to the left. Pelosi's push for jet remains up in the air. Hey, wait a minute. Where's my jet? I asked for a jet to do this show. Where the hell is my jet? All right. These are the issues ahead on the Jeff Allen Wolf Show, starting now.